Acme is making your grocery shopping easier than ever. Download the Acme mobile app to find digital deals, earn reward points, or shop for delivery or pickup. Acme, fresh foods, local flavors.
93.3 WMMR, audio on demand, presents the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
If I die in my dreams, I see you, I feel you. That is how I know you. Go on.
Well, that's our lead singer.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yeah, there's the audition.
Gotta be. All right, so in this this next segment, this whole thing started with, as does many things on the Preston and Steve Show, with somebody saying something stupid, and then it snowballs into something else.
Sure.
I don't even remember how I was trying to say the name of something, and the word river came in there.
And, yes, it was. I think it was Paris Hilton's boyfriend.
Yes.
And so you were saying it, you're having trouble, so it was something river, so I said the River Valley Vocal Band.
Yeah.
And you busted out laughing, because we all know.
Well, it doesn't exist,
the
River Valley Vocal Band, so we knew immediately that's got to be the name of our vocal group that has never been formed or even been talked about.
Yeah.
So we decided to go forward with it. And then...
But what were the Rolling Stones before they got together?
Exactly. Yeah. So we got a call later that morning as we began to discuss at length on air how we would like to have a vocal group. And we'd said we would have to have someone coach us. There's no way.
Because we know nothing about
this. We could do this on our own to learn parts, because we said we wanted to do Afternoon Delight. And because it was the
Anchorman
Starland Vocal Band.
Yes, right.
It was the group that did that. And sure enough, we got an email and somebody who was willing to come in and coach us on this song, and he's more than qualified. It's Justin Guarini.
Yeah!
In the studio this morning. How you doing, Justin?
I'm doing good. How are you?
We're good, man.
Yeah, you ready?
Yeah.
Ready for this? I've been listening all morning, man.
I don't know. And Justin came in and started maybe have some ideas. I'm like, well, let's just do this live.
Hash it out on air.
Yeah, we'll just figure this all out.
Yeah.
Well, you obviously, you know, and we've said this, we are big fan. You got a great voice. You're a great performer,
man.
And we've just grown to really love what you can do singing wise.
Thanks.
You way outclass us, but the question has to be, can you take a bunch of, you know, not very accomplished singers and at least give us a moment of brilliance?
Of course.
Okay.
Yeah. Of course.
All right.
I mean, you guys definitely have, you can carry a tune in a bucket. And just in case, I brought my son's import Kawasaki keyboard right here. It's purple and orange.
Wow. And black,
Yeah, yeah. Go check it out on the web. You'll be able to see it. It is a thing of beauty. I was wiping his chocolatey fingerprints off of it this morning. And it even gives you a nice little tone when you turn it on.
Oh! Wow. That's beautiful.
Magical.
Let's see a Steinway do that.
Wow.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, no, you know, Steinways do that.
Having attempted to sing harmony vocals on a few occasions, one of the most difficult parts is to be able to sing your part independent from the other part.
It's hard.
They're completely different notes. They intertwine and mesh in a proper way, but you have to sing your part as if you're kind of not hearing the other person sing, right?
Harmoniously.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? I mean, it's easy. I made a nice, easy arrangement. It's going to happen. Don't worry. Take a fire walk with me here.
Yes. The David Lynch era. Preston and I had been, we just watched that Eagles documentary, and we thought, if we could just do that.
Great football team.
If we could just sing perfectly like that.
Yeah, on the Eagles. Yeah.
There's like 50 of them, isn't there? Yeah.
No, the band.
Yeah. No, I know that. Yeah. But there's like 8 or 9 of them up on the stage playing.
Yeah,
all
that's
the same
what
time,
they want.
Right?
Yeah,
that's
yeah.
crazy. There are
a few people that have been through that band.
I did the plays in high school, and when I was a junior, we just chose some excerpts from the show Pippin.
Right.
And I want to say there was a song in there called like Morning Glow or something along those lines, and we were harmonizing, and there was only like 6 or 7 of us on stage, and I always felt like I was not singing right, like that, you know, that the harmony sounded great, and then there was this one guy who was ruining everything,
and that would be you.
That was
right.
me.
But you have a very good voice. When I've learned to do it, and I used to try to do it to just joke around to see if I could do it, is with Lennon and McCartney when they would sing. You could hear, and I guess this is part of harmonizing, and again, my ass cheeks are parting as I talk out of my ass, but It is a different. You've got to stay on your thing.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
It's basically like row your boat and keeping your spot and the whole thing. Okay.
Yeah. There's a sort of blend between listening and tuning out. So let's just focus on tuning out.
All right. Fair enough.
And by the way, we are all really good at this in our cars.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Everybody is.
People are in their showers. I get it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I get it. No, this you know, this is going to be fun. It's a really simple, easy arrangement. Five of you are going to sing, right?
Wow. Yes. Yeah.
Sure. All right, good. So, Nick, yeah?
Oh, I'm in, yeah.
Oh, good.
The only
one
who's not in is Marissa. She has volunteered to not be a part of this.
Yeah.
If you've ever hit a possum on a road, that's the sound that Marissa makes.
And squealing. By the way, I think our dark horse in this race is Nick McElwain.
Yeah.
You never hear him sing. I bet you he can carry a tune.
I actually intended to give Nick the spotlight here with the
really
melody. Yeah,
thanks
so yeah
for the pressure.
Yeah. Oh, it's okay.
We were thinking either Kathy or Casey would be the,
I'll tell you,
really,
the three tenors of this particular collective: Nick, Kathy, and Casey.
No,
I cannot sing.
I joke all the time, and I will call and leave them voicemails, but I cannot sing. I wanted to be in special chorus when I was in elementary school.
The chorus that wears helmets.
Don't
let them fall down.
That's what it was called. And I could never make it.
Okay.
I never made it.
Well, you know what?
It changes
we're
today.
We're going to pull something out
of
you.
All right.
So are we going to audition? No. Here it is. We would all fail.
So now, the first thing that's really important, you guys mentioned it, but I didn't actually hear it on the radio.
All right.
You don't get into a car and slam the pedal down and try and go 80 miles an hour, right?
Right.
You let it warm up a little bit, right? So you got to warm up. And so I want to give you a little warm up. Here we go. Do it again.
You love that.
It's great. Every single time. And then when you leave it alone for a little while, it like kind of goes into sleep mode. And when my son hits it, it does it again. I live for that.
When John Wayne Gacy used to reflect upon killings, that would be the sound of it. Yeah.
So we'll start in the key that we're in. And can everybody match this pitch? Say, oh, come on.
Oh, yeah, like that. Like it's a slam dunk.
Game over,
hey,
man.
Hey, wait. That's a huge thing.
Is it?
It really is.
Really?
If you're like, right, you'd be in trouble.
Okay.
All right, so good. We're good. This is good. Right. Step one, complete. Match pitch. So just to warm up the mouth and to warm up the front of the voice.
Okay.
Tip of the tongue.
Yeah. Yeah, and you guys have been talking too, so I'll make it brief.
All right. Okay.
But, listen first. Okay. Half step up.
Is this how Michael Douglas got oral cancer?
Yes, exactly.
No, that was.
So let's have a little beat here.
Okay.
Wait, are we?
We're listening to him.
I was
first.
Listening.
Oh, yeah, listen, listen first.
Listen to Justin first. My lips can't flap like that.
That's good. So let's try this. All right, let's try the next one.
With your tongue.
Listen
out.
To me first.
Listen first.
Yeah, it's just your tongue. So you stick your tongue out and go. Just the tip of your tongue, right?
Yeah.
So,
okay.
Three, four. Beautiful. Half step up. I love it, guys.
Oh, is it good?
It's so great. Well, it's so great, you know, because for me, like, to be honest with you, it's like you guys are sitting, I come in and I have my purple and yellow keyboard, and everybody's at their computers and it's all really easy and everything. I'm thinking, oh my God, I hope I do this right or I'm going to screw it up. So it's nice to see you guys out of your element.
That's right.
Because I certainly feel a little out of my element here.
If you're just tuning in, this is the first warm up of the River Valley Vocal Band.
It's good.
Our vocal coach, Justin Guarini. Okay.
It's going well. Okay, so
honestly, you think we're okay?
Yeah, you're fine. All right, you're fine. You've been talking for hours, and so I'm not going to belabor the point. And anyway, so let's figure out parts here. Preston,
yes,
you're the bass,
yes,
my friend.
Clearly.
Yes.
Yeah.
He's the bass.
Can you have two basses, by the way, or just one bass?
You can have one, two basses. We can do multiple.
Okay. Let's yeah, he's got a plan.
That's good. So, and so I can't get any lower than
I can do an octave.
Keyboard's
dying.
Keyboard's dying.
So we're going to do... So if you think about it, gonna find my baby, gonna hold her tight, gonna grab some afternoon delight. So you're gonna ooh under that. So it's 1, 2, 3, 4. Oh, sorry. For you.
Right.
Ooh, 2, 3, 4, and ooh. Yeah, you got it. Back down.
Ooh,
and up. So that's all you need to worry about right
now.
Oh,
wow.
Awesome.
Wow.
Yeah.
The trick is...
I told you I'd make it simple, right?
Though, Justin, for an untrained singer, to remember that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. So I got it. Here comes the bride, your fourth. It's us. Right. Do. good. All right, so...
All right, I got it.
Okay.
Then who would be, like, sort of a little bit higher than that, but not too much higher?
Probably me.
Probably Nick, yeah.
Nick,
yeah.
Okay, yep. So you have the simplest part.
Yes.
One note.
Okay.
Just like the show, Nick.
One note.
Keep really not a lot of
up.
Depth.
No. Keep the gloves up, sir. Keep the gloves up.
Not a lot of nuance.
So it's just one note. So can you do this together?
All right.
Press. Oh, no.
Okay. Écoutez.
Okay, sorry. What is his part again? I'm sorry.
Same. You start on the same note. You're an octave lower. So you just say the same the whole time, all right? So 3, 4. You go up. Good, good.
I held that the whole time. Should I breathe in the middle of that?
if you'd like.
Yes, hi, this is Clive Davis. I would love to sign these gentlemen.
Clive.
Justin knows Clive.
I've been there, done that. Yeah. I've been on the other side of that desk. So, that's that. And then who's slightly up from there?
I guess me or Casey?
Me or you.
Yeah, Casey's a better singer.
Well, maybe we should have a tryout. figure out who.
Is this also going to be an ooh background part?
Yes, it's all oohs. Yeah, ooh.
Who do you think ought to be the lead?
That's important to know.
Do you think Casey ought to
sing? Casey.
I think so,
yeah.
Steve, why don't you jump in and be a part of this,
all right, I'll
this
do
chorus?
This. Okay.
Ooh, mm-hmm. Ooh, yeah. Right. So you ooh.
Ooh, that's tough.
Thank you.
Great.
How does it go?
So it's ooh, 3, 4, ooh, just a half step.
Ooh, ooh, ooh.
You're going up too high.
Wait, am I going to have to go higher than that? Because I don't think I can.
Wait. You're just here.
Ooh, okay. Is that good?
So remember Jaws?
No.
The movie?
No, I do, yeah. I thought you were about it. Yeah.
It's up just a little bit.
That's good. Yeah, that's good.
Is that right?
Close. Too high.
A little too high. So let's go. You want to?
No. I just want. Listen to Justin do it because you're good at parody.
Right.
Yes.
That's
yes.
It.
Yes.
Do it a few times.
Okay. Yep.
All right, perfect. So it's the same thing.
All right.
So you just do...
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah. Okay, good. So can everybody remember the notes? All
right.
Down here. Right. You're here. Okay, right?
Just feel that first note.
1, 2, 3, 4. Ooh, I'll sing with you. Now go out. Ooh. This is you, Preston. Right. So let's try that one more time. Oh, keep going. So,
great.
3, 4.
Ooh.
Great.
Ooh.
Great.
God.
Great.
Are you seriously?
Hey.
Does it sound okay?
What did you say, Case?
I thought it sounded pretty good.
It's okay. Good.
I tried not to change my note in the middle of that.
Justin,
though,
like, you shouldn't. When you're singing, though, you have no, I have no, I don't know how that sounds. Does it sound okay?
It does. It sounds good. Trust me. It's all fine.
Yeah, so
it's
the jaws
within
level.
The tones of what we're singing, if you don't hear this sound, that means you're off key. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
It's an oscillation. Yeah, that's good.
That's so I got it.
But when it blends with the other notes, if you're hearing... I wish I had a tone we could play.
Yeah. Okay, I think I know what you're talking about.
Okay. So you hear that start? As he's slowly going up, you're hearing... You're off key when you do that.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Whoa. Right. It's literally the air vibrating.
Mm-hmm.
Always off key.
So this is you, Kathy.
Oh, boy. Kathy's a very manly voice.
I do, kind of. All right, wait, do it again. I think that's too high.
Yeah?
Just try it.
Feel it down.
No,
your...
you have the capability. You have the range.
Feel it in your testicles.
So, right in your testes, Kathy.
Okay, let me pinch and roll.
Drop them.
All right, go ahead. Do it again.
So.
I did it.
You did it. Right. You did it. That's good. Right. That's good. That's good. Real nice.
The trick is remembering. Like, I'm at the jaws. Like, mine is... See? All right. And I'm using jaws to remind me.
And that's it.
Okay.
Just like Preston jaws? Can use Here Comes the Bride.
Right. There we go.
Yeah. There you go.
What about me? That's it. Am I jaws?
No. You're back to the future.
Your gums.
I'm back to the future. All right. Got it.
So, you okay?
Oh my God.
Okay, another important thing, you got to breathe. I know you're nervous.
All right, okay.
You got to breathe.
Okay.
So take a nice deep breath. 2, 3, 4. Very good.
Okay.
Okay?
All right.
All right, good. So everybody remember their notes? It's
yeah.
Yep.
Ooh. And then you're...
Am I right?
Yes. And then you'll... So let's have the first notes, please.
Right.
We're in minor now.
Wait, was I wrong?
It's you, Steve? Yeah, so... So, okay, let's try it again. So first notes, so...
You want to count off?
No, we'll just do the first notes. Okay. We're just going to hear all the notes.
Okay.
That's the first note.
Note one. So that's the first. Those are your first notes. Everybody's really only, with the exception of possibly Casey. It's everyone's responsible for three notes.
Okay.
All right. So don't sweat it.
I'm two though, right?
Hey,
two for now.
I need to point out that the text messages are very supportive. They're coming in, and people are loving this. Could be the greatest segment we've ever done. Okay, just wanted to share that.
Great. Sensing a bit
Always.
Of sarcasm.
You know what I have to say that?
Ooh.
Okay.
Nice.
All right, we got it.
Okay, so let's do, put them all together, huh?
All right. Now, you're going to direct us up and down?
Yeah, sure.
All right, all right.
Yeah,
and we all hit the same up, I mean, even though we're singing differently at this,
yes,
at the different point.
With the exception of Nick, yeah.
Okay, because he's just steady. He's just
one trick pony.
One
solid
trick
as a rock.
Pony.
Okay.
Exactly. All right. Good. You good?
I'm good.
Are we embarrassed yet?
No.
No, we're good. Okay, good.
We're good.
So first notes. Ooh.
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 Wait.
Ooh, thank you.
When I hold my finger up, it works.
Ooh. So three. Great. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. I mean, that's it.
Yeah.
That's the first half.
Did that sound good?
That's the first half.
Yeah.
Cool.
Oh, man.
All right. So then, Casey, do you
want
to put the melody on top of this?
I don't know. You tell me what to do.
Do you know it?
Find
my baby. Yeah, right. Okay, so let's just try the first half before we get into the second one, which has
fair
a little
enough.
More to it.
God damn, how do people put entire songs together?
I'm so tired.
Jesus Christ.
Take a deep breath. Ready, everybody?
All right, yeah.
So,
put your finger up, Preston. It really helps.
So your first note, Casey's gonna find my baby.
Gonna hold
okay, ready?
Tight.
Yep.
So let's just everybody sing our first notes and. Oh, wait, stop. Sorry, just the first notes. Yeah, okay. Notes. So it's the first notes. All right, great. Now, Casey, we're just going to go for it. One, two, three, four.
Gonna find my baby, gonna hold her tight, gonna grab some afternoon delight. And it's right, wait until the middle of a cold dark night.
Oh, my God. Right?
Yeah. I got to stand up.
Hey, can I try something?
Wait.
Hold on. Can I try something?
Yeah.
I want to do the Bugs Bunny thing where he just holds his hand up and then we all start singing.
Leopold.
Yeah. Okay. Leopold. Are you ready? Here we go.
Yes! Leopold.
Hey, I'm doing the wrong. You got to help me.
You're just off key.
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah, I'll help you through.
But do I need to go higher or lower?
Higher.
Well, it depends on what you do.
Same. But you keep pointing at me. What am I doing wrong? Am I too low?
I'll tell you. Okay. I'll do like this if you're too high. Right, okay. And I'll sing your part too.
Somebody sected in and said we should be doing this on a duck boat.
Yeah!
We are. We're on a boat.
Screw the haters.
All right.
So let's try that again before
wish they could sing as good.
Before we learn the second part, all right? So
there's a second part?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But we just did one whole half.
Yeah, one whole half.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So all right. First notes again.
Ooh, that is cool.
Okay, so ready? Here we go, okay? One, two, three, four.
Gonna find my baby, gonna hold her tight, gonna grab some afternoon delight. My motto's always been when it's right, it's right. We in the morning of cold dark night.
The words are right there in front of you.
I don't know that part. Can I hear this?
I can't read.
Yeah, hang on. I want to hear this.
Find my baby, gonna hold her tight, gonna grab some afternoon delight. My motto's always been when it's right, it's right. Why wait until the middle of a...
Got it.
All right. Cheater.
All right, good.
All right.
Okay, so... now, the second part is
by the way, this
that...
is the first rehearsal of the River Valley Vocal Band, if you're just tuning in.
It is the first rehearsal.
Want to be ready for the State Fair, Justin.
Okay, good. Yeah, this is the first rehearsal. Be gentle, everyone who's listening.
All right.
It's all good.
Oh, they know. So, they know. They support.
That was our first score. So, the second part is that... that I put in there is when everything's a little clear and little in the night.
Yeah.
Now this is
we all sing together. Yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah.
All right. Wow. Oh boy.
So let's talk through the rhythm first. Right, that's the most important thing. Okay. So everybody,
you mean this is the hard part now?
Okay. Yeah. This is the hard part. So I'll listen to me.
Okay.
When everything's a little clearer in the light of day.
Okay.
Okay. I'll do it again. And you know the night is always going to be there anyway. So
it
let's
seems
do that
motionless,
together.
Justin.
It's a little dry.
It's a little dry.
Okay, so do that with me.
Okay.
Go.
When everything's a little clearer in the light of day.
Okay, next line.
And you know the night is always going to be there anyway.
That'll get you. So it's just basically what you have to look at is the when and the and are two... claps, then you go.
Okay.
Okay.
Try it one more time.
So, three, listen.
When everything's a little clearer in the light of day.
Next line. One, two, you know you're gonna... that's it. So everything seems to be happening when everything's a little clearer in the light of day. Listen. And you know you're gonna...
Okay, I got you.
The night.
You have to anticipate the... Right. The
you know the
line.
Night is always going to
you know
be there
anyway.
What are you, an idiot?
Yeah. Come on.
Yeah.
So,
girl, we can't get much better.
All right. Okay, so let's try it. Okay. One, two, three, four.
When everything's a little clearer in the light of day.
Hey.
And you know the night is always gonna be there anyway.
The lyrics are right there.
I know.
Oh,
reading is hard.
Now we're
reading.
All right.
All right.
Okay, so your second note. So the first note you started on was.
Yeah.
I fell asleep.
Beautiful.
All right. So these are your first notes, right? The second note that you go up to is going to be the first note of the second part.
Huh?
Okay. It's a riddle.
The second note in the first part is the first note in the second part.
Yes.
Gotcha.
Oh, yeah, I got it.
You got that?
Yeah, I got you. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, I'm Jaws, right?
Yes. Jaws.
Is that right? So I'm starting it. So it'd be, when everything's a little clear.
Is that right? So listen, I'll start with you then, Steve. So it's just, you're just going to go back down. When everything's a little in the light of day. You got it, man.
And you know the night is going to be there anyway.
Perfect.
It's always going to be there. Whatever. It's always going to be there anyway.
It's going to friggin' be there anyway.
Good. Yeah, there you go.
You perfect. Got it. Perfect.
I'm awesome.
So for you,
okay. If you got me going too high.
Everything's a little clearer in the light of day.
That's really high.
Is that high for you?
I think so.
You can
I'll
do it, Kathy.
I'll sing it with you.
All right, fine.
3, 4.
When
everything's a little clearer in the light of day.
It's too high.
No.
I think it is.
You're doing it.
Really?
You have to breathe.
Sorry.
Yeah. You got to breathe. You got
to
take a nice
You know what? I feel bad because you had to follow me, and I know you're nervous now.
I know. I am.
So, Steve, you got your part.
When everything's a little clearer in the light of day.
There you go.
So, Kathy, I'll do it with you.
Okay.
So, and Steve, do it with me as well. That's it. Those are notes, huh?
When everything...
Okay, ready? 3, 4.
When everything's a little clearer in the light of day.
That's right, Kathy. You got it.
And God damn you.
All right, I think I got it.
So, the next one will be, I think it's F as well. When everything's a little clearer in the light of day. You actually have to move.
That's you, Nick.
There.
You got okay. I'm working on the words.
So your part is.
Okay.
When everything's a little clearer in the light of day. So this
sing
is
the note he's singing.
Nope.
No.
When overshot.
Do it again.
When
everything's a little clearer in the light of day.
There you go, man. Good.
Everything's a little clearer in the light of day.
Awesome. And Preston, you would just do the same thing as Steve, but an octave below.
Really?
When everything's a little clear in the light of day.
Yeah.
And you know the night is always gonna be there anyway. Yeah? All right. Yeah, we wanna try it out?
Yeah.
Now we'll go slow.
Oh my God, this is gonna be horrible.
Who am I doing with?
You would be the melody, so.
Yeah,
so
the main melody. You stay on that.
Yeah, I think so.
You'll know.
So
it.
I think you, yeah, you'll feel it.
You'll know.
So.
When
this is everybody.
All right, I feel it. It's going to be a home run.
And this is you, Preston. Ready. First notes, first notes.
Nick, you're killing us, man.
Can you help him out, Casey?
Okay. All right. I'm calling it.
No!
I'm calling it.
What? Hell out of here.
I think this part we need to work on off air.
No. We're almost there.
Let's try it once. Let's try it once.
All right.
Are we losing?
No.
No, go ahead.
Okay, good. All right. First notes?
Yes, let's do it.
When
does it suck that bad?
It's
when,
off.
When is Steve?
When
your hair capping?
When your hair pressed?
When?
All right, let's try.
Let's just go for it.
Let's go
for
it.
3, 4.
When everything's a little clearer in the light of day.
Oh, my God.
And you know the night is always going to be there anyway.
It's not bad.
It's not bad. It's Gregorian.
You're right. Gregorian hits.
Little Gregorian hits.
I quit the band.
Really?
The first part, it's a 20-minute segment. That's all we get. That's it. So the first part was great. So if we want to go back and just do that for posterity's
sake. Let's just do the whole thing. Come on.
Oh, my God. Okay, yes. Let's do our first and only performance of the entire song.
Man, I nailed it.
We'll definitely get the first part right. All right, give us the key, if you don't mind, Justin.
Here we go. 3, 4. Gonna find my baby, gonna hold her tight, gonna grab some afternoon delight. My motto's always been, when it's right, why wait until the middle of a cold, dark night?
Slight train wreck. That was so good.
There's only so much I can teach.
I know.
From the top again.
Last time.
You know, and push through. I would say push through. It's going to be funny. If nothing else.
Okay, just do it.
It'll be funny if nothing else. Okay.
We're doing the whole thing no matter what.
Okay, ready?
That's it.
And then at the end, just do afternoon delight.
Okay.
Whatever it is.
Afternoon delight.
Yeah, that's it. Okay. Right. Put a nice bow on it. Right, so.
Okay.
I'm just calling you Kathy.
Steve, Nick, and Preston.
All right,
here we go.
So, 3, 4.
Goodbye, my baby, gonna hold.
Wait, stop. I totally screwed you on that one. 1, 2, 3, 4.
Gonna find my baby, gonna hold her tight, gonna grab some afternoon delight. My motto's always been, when it's right, why wait until the middle of a cold, dark night?
When everything's a little clearer in the light of day, and you know the night is always gonna be there anyway. Afternoon delight.
Yeah! Oh, we did it! We're amazing.
I need to hear that. I need to hear that back.
That was awesome!
I wasn't even close to doing what I was supposed to do.
What that was better.
We did.
We took it. We
just made it our own.
We just invented a new form of music.
Truly.
Gregorio pop. Gregorian chants.
Yeah. Sorry, I just spit all the Red Bull out when you guys hit the wing.
I think our biggest supporter on Instant Message has been Chuck, our assistant program director.
Oh, Chuck. And Chuck is usually the guy who is totally supportive with it. He is destroying us
on
Instant Message I'm reading. New idea. You all shut up. Let Justin sing. Guys, Rome wasn't destroyed in a day. Make that Rome actually not too crappy. And then Bill Weston, actually, for the first time ever, instant messaged in and said, those ratings I spoke about yesterday, gone. So there you go.
Come on.
All right, haters. It's a pleasure.
Haters.
Yeah. We tried something different. Can you blame us for having a fallback career?
Yeah. Good. I think we were pretty split on the text.
Way back. That was okay, that last
one. Considering that you don't sing, and the fact that, like,
we're
this is the first time. Hardly talented. But this is the first time you guys are doing it, like, and you're doing it live. Like, come on, that's fantastic.
We should take a break.
Okay.
We're going to come back. Justin, I think you're going to actually perform.
Yeah, you're going to sing, right? Are you?
I don't know. That's what Nick had said.
Give us something before you go.
Okay.
One line of a song. Something. I don't know.
How about...
Or you do this the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah, go ahead. Let's hear it done right.
Gonna find my baby, gonna hold her tight, gonna grab some afternoon delight. My motto's always been, when it's right, it's right. Why wait until the middle of a cold, dark night?
When everything's a little clearer in the light of day.
Sing with me, come on.
And you know the night is always going to be there anyway.
Oh, afternoon delight.
Yeah! Yeah.
Wow. All
right. Maybe we can come to Broadway with you.
Yeah, why not?
If you want to follow Justin on Twitter, is it at Justin underscore?
Yeah, it's at Justin Guarini. Underscore Guarini, and okay. Then my website is just Justin Guarini.
Listen, you're a good man for coming in and taking this pile of crap and molding it into the singing sensations we currently are.
It's fantastic.
Wait a second. Is the band breaking up?
I'm ready?
I'm not ready to leave.
I think, no. And once I have a taste, I've had a taste of success.
Yeah.
You know what this is? I realize there are times in life when you realize you have a gift. Today was one of those times.
Well, we obviously know the diva in the band now.
Yes.
Yeah. Preston.
Hey.
Throws his drummer. Hands up he is the drummer. One thing goes wrong.
He is the drummer.
It's creative differences. That's all I'm saying. I can't work with you people.
That's it.
You know?
I feel like I'm working with Scott Weiland.
Yeah, that's it.
Well, all right.
And Kathy
it's the
Slash.
Smack, too. I'm sorry.
Kathy Slash. No, Gash.
Yeah. Gash. Yeah. That's your name in the band from
Gash.
Now on.
Gash.
All right. Anyway, classic. Justin, you're a great sport. Thanks
hey, my
for coming
pleasure.
By.
Thank
we
you so very much.
Justin Guarini, ladies and gentlemen, the true professional. We're going to take a break and we'll be right back. Stay there.
Not only can you hear Preston and Steve, you can see them too. Check out the Weekly Rush on Xfinity On Demand. New episodes, you guessed it, weekly.
Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro. Get personalized deals on the products you buy most and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors.
Back with more of the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
In our studio, we have two gentlemen that are stars of this show. Looks like it's pretty damn compelling.
It might be the finest document on organized crime in America that I've ever seen. It's amazing.
Inside the American Mob on Nat Geo. I want to welcome Michael Franzese and Salvatore Polizzi to the show this morning. Gentlemen, welcome to Philadelphia.
Good to be here.
Thanks for being here. We were looking at your, credentials, if you will.
Yeah.
And you guys were deep inside the world of, and what is the proper phrase? I mean, the show is called The American Mob. Is it the Mafia, La Cosa Nostra? What do you guys prefer to refer to it as?
La Cosa Nostra.
Okay. And you were deep inside this for most of your life?
Well, my dad was the underboss of the Colombo family, and I grew up in that life, and then I spent almost 20 years there myself.
Michael, you were kind of you had a great business savvy, and that was your strong point in the family. And you were up. You took, I guess, what is called the blood oath. So you were in deep. And yet you were able to walk away from it as you were, Sal. I mean, two of you. I mean, this is from our outward perception. This is something that doesn't happen a lot, at least the way the movies depict the mob. And that's really the way we get a lot of our information.
But isn't it a little easier now to walk away?
Michael was really born into royalty. I was a street guy. I mean, I'm on the street, you know.
Right, yeah.
So it's quite different. I think Michael sort of, in a strange way, akin to Michael Corleone. I mean, he's born into it. So, I mean, when you think about it, that's really his story. And his dad was convicted with my uncle in the 60s of bank robbery. So, you know, we had sort of remote connections.
So, in the series, they explain how the different facets and how the families would war and then sometimes work together and how, the process kicked in about dismantling it. But it's a fascinating way business is conducted, and Sal, you're a, and this is a question I've always had. Do you, when you're in the mob or La Cosa Nostra, and you see gang movies, like I know you're a fan of The Godfather, it's your favorite movie,
right?
Do you
take tips from The Godfather when you
You know, that's funny you say that. It sort of endorsed us. I mean, in 72, I was 27. I'm a little older than Michael. That night that the movie premiered, we went out and hijacked a truck to celebrate it.
That's what we did. A celebration.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, and then you're just a huge fan. Did you then start, because we've heard, like, with a lot of criminals incorporate stuff from Scarface into the way they act and the you know, their outward appearance. Was that something you were doing as well, barring from movies?
Absolutely. I mean, that's what John Gotti did.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a Hollywood gangster, the first dot-com Don, you know?
Right.
Michael was at a different level. I mean, Michael grew up knowing Joe Colombo. I mean, I never got near there. It's like the White House, you know. He was
so you're on the streets now. Now, Michael, you display a business savvy. You did a thing with it involved gas. Explain how you made a lot of money for the family.
Well, basically, I just devised a scheme where we would defraud the government out of the tax on every gallon of gasoline. And I ran that operation for about 7 or 8 years.
And this was with Russian mobsters as well?
Yeah, I organized the Russian mob from Brighton Beach. And like I said, for about 7 years. And basically what we did, you know, the tax on a gallon of gasoline back then was 9 cents federal and 25 to 30 cents state and local.
Right.
So at the height of my operation, we were selling about a half a billion gallons of gas a month and pulling down close to 40 cents a gallon.
So you're,
so
you're
a lot of money.
You're the golden child. I mean, you're generating a lot of capital.
Yeah.
For the family, and your dad is a much feared enforcer. And at a point in your life, I guess, was when you got married, you decided you had to make a change. You had to leave?
Well, you know, I spent a lot of time there, and I became a major target of law enforcement. I got, you know, I went to trial 5 times. I beat a case with Giuliani back in 84, 85. And, you know, I met this young girl. She was a young girl of faith. I fell in love with her, and I just realized that, you know, if I wanted to spend my life with her, that it was only a matter of time before I went down.
Right.
Either you go to jail or you're dead. One of the two happen in that life.
So as you're in this relationship, Michael, are you thinking, okay, I'm falling in love with this woman, which means I'm probably going to get killed?
Well, I didn't think about getting killed, but, I found, I tell you what, she swept me off my feet. What could I say?
You know?
So I made the choice, and, it was the right choice at the time because, I don't know if you remember, back in the 80s, Giuliani, you know, really declared war on the mob. He started it all. They started with that RICO indictment, and they were indicting guys left and right and giving them a ton of time.
And a large part of the series focuses in on his tactic, which involved, as they explain in the series, is instead of taking one person out, which would always seem to be that person would be gone and then they replace immediately with someone else, to take entire chunks of people to get as many people at once as possible. And that was Giuliani's tactic.
That was the RICO indictment. Yeah. They used that. And I got to tell you about this series. You know, I've done a number of these. This is probably the best series on the mob, the most informative and the best, the most well done that I've ever seen.
It clarified. I mean, because as much as I'm fascinated, we all are, and we all tie into these movies and read the books. It clarified it in a way that I haven't seen clarified ever. Like, I think I have a better understanding, and still it seems a bit of an enigma.
Is there, when you live this type of lifestyle, can you ever actually relax?
No, not really. When you're in New York, the heartbeat, you pick up the heartbeat of New York, you're on the move. I mean, it's like, you know, it's just everything is nonstop. I mean, it's completely different. I left New York 29 years ago. I live in California. I feel like I'm walking slow and drinking a lot of water out there. You know.
Well, you're a screenplay writer now.
I've done some movies.
You've done some movies, and that's where your focus is. You've also consulted for the FBI. You've gone up to Quantico and lend your expertise as well.
Yeah.
When you tried to get out of the business, so to speak, you moved upstate New York, but couldn't make ends meet, and you got back into it. What were you were turning evidence against a corrupt judge? How did you?
I was involved with a corrupt judge. I really didn't ever have to go to jail. All I had to do was keep paying him. And
right.
I decided my two kids were in high school at that time. They were athletes. I got to get them out. I mean, I was close with Gotti. I coached his kids and my kids, Pop Warner football. So, I mean, you know, you have a love
for... Did that team ever lose, by the way?
We had influence.
Nice.
What was... Gotti's an enigma, and they talk about, obviously, extensively in the series. He was not liked by a lot of people because he was very flashy. And he did exactly what you're not supposed to do in the mob, which is to draw attention to yourself.
He was the gift and he was the curse. I mean, really. I mean, when you think about it. But, you know, you got to look at the series. The series clearly explains that technology came at the right time.
Yeah.
Giuliani, technology, previous informants, putting all that information together. You got to understand the law back then. You couldn't get what they call a Title III going into a house to wiretap. You had to get authorization. Today, they could wiretap you driving your car or going to the bathroom. I mean, you know, we got 9/11, you know, the Patriot Act. So technology and crime was a lot different for 30, 40 years ago.
Michael, I want to ask you, as someone who was born into a family and into this this way of life, it's funny because I have children, and slowly you see them start to realize, you know, who daddy is and what he does for a living and stuff like that. Do you remember growing up when you realized that your family life was a little bit different than the average person?
Well, I realized that early on because my dad was the John Gotti of his day as far as law enforcement scrutiny and all that. So I grew up, you know, my dad was under constant investigation. We always had, you know, 10 agencies around my house parked 7 days a week.
That's wild.
And, you know, so I knew he was different early on. But, you know, I grew up hating the police as a result. I mean, my dad was my hero growing up, and the law enforcement were the enemy. And so I grew up hating the police, hating the government. It was just the way I was. Not that my dad taught me that way, but it was what I witnessed throughout my life, you know. And it took me a long time to finally realize, you know, later on in life that they were the good guys, at least most of the time, and we were the bad guys. But you grow up with this distorted sense of view where good is bad and bad is good. So,
and he's your dad. I mean, you look up to your dad. It's natural to do that.
You know, he was a great father, great husband to my mother, very supportive of me. So, and my dad had a way of whatever was going on the outside, he never brought it into the house. We were just, it was family stuff. But, you know, I grew up different. You know, cops on the end of the street.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, all that.
We've had a chance to talk to people over the years who have had ties with organized crime and been in it as well. And it's funny because sometimes you'll hear the stories and they look back kind of humorously and fun, and it was a good time and all this. And romantically almost, that it, you know, it has that appeal to it. How do you guys look back at it? Do you look back at it as, wow, it was fun, or wow, it was really dangerous and we shouldn't have been doing that type of stuff?
You know, you don't look at it as being dangerous. I mean, look, you know, we had it going on for a while. I mean, I had good times. I mean, I had my own jet plane. I had a helicopter. I had a couple of hundred guys around me. So for a while, we had it going on. And, you know, you talk about the pressure. It was just normal to us.
Right.
It's just the way we lived. We lived with, you know, people trying to target us as far as the government is concerned. So it was just normal life.
I mean, you didn't know any other world.
No.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I wouldn't know what it was back then to be without pressure.
Right.
But that was just life.
Well, right. I want to ask you about the economics of all of it, because the gas scam that you're talking about and the jets and the helicopters, regardless of what you do for a living, if you make that much money and you earn that much and you become comfortable in that lifestyle, that has got to be really difficult to walk away from. You're providing for yourself. You're providing from your family. So despite all of the danger, despite all of the pressure, how difficult was it to walk away from that kind of a living, that kind of a money?
It was tough. You know, it's a far fall from grace, as they say. But, you know, when at the height of everything, when I was starting to catch a lot of heat, and we were bringing in, you know, close to $10 million a week into my operation.
What? $10 million a week?
A week. And I'm figuring, I got to shut this down, you know. But then I said, you know what? You get as much trouble for $1 million as you do for $1 billion. So I may as well keep it going.
You know, and Michael, you did, it was 10 years was the longest stretch you did?
I did 8 on it. I got a 10-year sentence. I did 8 on the 10.
And $14 million you had to pay back in restitution?
Yes.
How did you, I mean, did you have that at the ready to pay back?
Well, yeah.
Okay.
Okay. Were you well protected while you were incarcerated?
Well, you know, they kept me locked down because when I made a decision to walk away, I didn't realize how public it would become, but Life magazine blew it up and everything. So they kept me locked down for quite some time for, you know, for my own protection, according to them. I kept trying to get out of the hole, but they kept putting me back in.
Wow. Sal, were you friends, or did you know Sammy the Bull Gravano?
You know what? I left before Sammy came on. I kind of went back. I'm a little older than Michael. I was in Lewisburg in that Goodfellas movie.
Right.
And so there was guys like Carrie the Hunchback, Rick Abeny from Philadelphia, and Chicken Phil Testa. Back in the 70s, the mob was secretive, much like America.
Right.
I mean, we didn't have all this, you know, all this media and all. I mean, it was very secretive. So it was a different life, and it really made it feel you know, special and fascinating and romantic, and when in fact it really wasn't.
And to somebody who's on the street and going up in your situation, it was seductive. Did you? There, a movie just came out recently about called The Iceman about Kuklinski.
Yeah.
Were you? Did you operate in it? Because he was labeled as perhaps the most sociopathic hitman of all time. Was it
bad guy?
Bad guy.
Bad guy.
Yeah.
Found all kinds of ways to kill you, and it was funny. He answered to a guy named DeMeo, who was really bad. And DeMeo, when time came for DeMeo to get whacked, Castellano put the move out. Gotti was afraid of him. DeMeo was a madman. Read about him, Roy DeMeo.
And Gotti. So and Sammy the Bull was Gotti's main dude. Who was of all of them between both of you? Who was the biggest, craziest lunatic you both encountered in your years in the mob?
Well, I'll be honest with you. You know, a lot of guys get that tag, but they don't act that way on the street. The guys that act that way are the guys that don't last. So when you're on the street and you respect one another, you don't act that way. But Roy DeMeo was a little bit crazy. And, you know, I knew Sammy the Bull well. I'll be honest with you, I wasn't a fan of his. And I knew Nicky Scarfa well.
Did you as well? Yeah. You mentioned that the Philly mob. How much interaction did you have with the mobsters down here, with people in the... La Cosa Nostra.
I didn't have much interaction. Basically, I played chess with Harrod Hunchback and Phil Tester in Lewisburg. I mean, it was a great time. We didn't have telephones.
Right.
It was a different time there.
Hey, when you were in Lewisburg, did you ever go visit Bucknell University? That's where I went to school.
I used to listen to the games.
Yeah. It's a beautiful campus.
Right. Yeah.
In fact, there was a hit you had out on a guy on a Nick McElwain. But,
I actually spoke to your student athletes there at Bucknell.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Really?
You're a motivational speaker, are you not? Yeah.
Man, that was you're always afraid that the guys are going to break out of Lewisburg when you're on campus and you're in this protected upper middle class white world.
Michael, what do you cover in your motivational speeches? What is that all about? What message do you deliver?
Well, when I work with the NCAA and all the universities, I speak to the student athletes about the dangers of gambling and how to get in trouble and the associations that they keep, you know, how to watch out for that. And I've been doing that since I got out of prison in 96.
Wow. Do you do any advocating against organized crime, against people falling into that lifestyle?
Oh, absolutely. What I explain to people, it's an evil life. And I'm not saying that the guys are evil, because I'm not the pot calling the kettle black. I'm just blessed that I got out of it. But I don't know any family of any member of that life that hasn't been totally devastated.
Wow.
Including my own. Not my wife and kids, but my brothers, sisters, mother, father. I mean, it's a mess, and every family I know of, every member of that life is in the same situation. Life is tough.
Are you still in danger now, by any chance?
Well, let's put it this way. I mean, I can't go back to Brooklyn and say, hey, guys, I'm moving back to the neighborhood.
Right, yeah.
I don't think I'd last too long.
Right.
You know, is anybody actively looking for me? I don't believe so. But, you know, the guys that I was close with, like Persico and everything, they're in jail for the rest of their life.
Right.
We do know of some active members, and we've, you know, it's not too hard to find people that are involved in organized crime. And we've had, you know, even met people here and that. And I know some people get a little bit nervous if you even just meet somebody who's involved
in
life. But I have a feeling that, look, you're not going to get, if you don't do anything to piss them off, they're not going to waste their time to go, you know, do anything to you. I mean, you guys need a reason in order to do something bad. Or I say you guys, but I'm, you know what I mean by that.
Well, you know, the FBI comes to me every once in a while. They said, Mike, we got word from our informants. Your name is coming up a lot again. Be careful. They're talking about it. So, you know, they're obligated to do that when they know your life's in danger. But I got to tell you this. Nicky Scarfa and I were going to, I had the security guards union at one time. I had control of them. And we were going to unionize the guards over in Atlantic City.
Right.
And so Nicky and I worked out a deal together. And guess who was going to help us with that?
Who?
You'll never guess. Al Sharpton.
I love
it. Really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Al was...
he's always been a paragon of virtue.
He was a gun for hire for us.
Wow.
Okay? And he was going to get a bunch of his people and picket all of the buildings and all of the hotels.
Yeah.
I got stories to tell you about Al. I only wish one day I can be next to him and we can go back and
forth. Oh, he'd crap a brick. That would have no idea. Yeah, yeah.
Believe me.
So on that witness, you were both on witness protection for a while, and you both walked away from it, correct?
No, I was never.
You were never on, but
no,
you were Sal.
Yeah, I was. Yeah,
and decided you it's. Do you go, is it as we saw in Goodfellas with Henry Hill, where they stick him in a prefab suburban situation and it's just ultimately frustrating? Is that what they did with you? Or
well, they stuck me in Texas and thought I was going to blend. I feel like Cousin Vinny, like, you know. Forget about it. I stuck out like a sore thumb. Luckily, my kids were great athletes, and I got out of it.
Did you ever see the Steve Martin movie, My
Absolutely.
Blue Heaven?
Yeah,
that's you, right?
The story about the Steve Martin movie is great. You know, Nora Ephron, who died, was married to Nick Pileggi. So as Nick Pileggi's interviewing Henry, she's in there listening to how funny it was, and that's how she wrote My Blue Heaven.
Oh, no
kidding. Yeah, it's great stuff, man. Wow. Hanging out in San Diego.
You seem really happy. Like for a guy who was in the life that you, you smile a lot and you're cracking jokes.
Man, I lived two or three lives already. I'm a happy camper.
Well, you know, I sense that both of you, obviously, and you're very candid about it, but that you've been actively attempting to make restitution for what you did, and that, you know, you Michael, with speaking to people and motivational speaking, and you, Sal, as well, was there, both of you, what was the one moment, the one second that you were there where you were thinking, okay, I'm dead, this is it, this is where it all comes to an end? Michael?
Well, for me, I had one of the dangers or the horrors of that life, I would say. You're in trouble. You don't know it. Your best friend walks you into a room. You don't walk out again.
Right.
And I had that experience one night, and it was scary. I'll be honest with you. I was walking into a room. I didn't know if I was going to walk out. And people said, well, wow, what courage you had to walk in. It wasn't courageous. It was robotic. You know?
Yeah.
You just figure, hey, this is it. This is it.
Wow.
And
it was a friend of yours? Was it your dad that brought you in? Or was it you?
No,
just,
it was a very dear friend.
Yeah.
And a guy I knew all my life. And as a matter of fact, after the experience, obviously I'm here, so it worked out. You know, they were grilling me over the gas business and money and all of that stuff. And
but you thought you thought you weren't coming out.
I honestly didn't think I was gonna walk out of the room. Right. And when I got out, you know, I got in a car with the guy, and he was my good friend. He drove me there, and I was ready to open up on him. I turned to him, I said, Jimmy, and he says, wait, stop. He says, Mike, I got to tell you, handle yourself well in there tonight. It could have been a real problem. And I got mad at him. I said, but you're my best. I know you all my life. You wouldn't tell me? He said, well, Mike, if it was the other way around, would you have told me?
Yeah.
And I thought a minute, and I said, no. He said, well, you know, that's the life we live.
Yeah. Jesus.
I'll tell you what happened. No, a year later, they walked him into a room, and he never walked out. Yeah.
You know, at that point in the conversation, I would have my whoopee in my left hand and a pacifier. I mean, forget it.
Yeah.
Sal, how about you?
I was a little luckier. I mean, I worked a judge, and then I was hiding out quietly in San Antonio, right? And they came to me and said, we got a Gotti trial. We want you to be the best witness. You're a good storyteller.
Yeah.
Somebody called me a raconteur. I said, what the hell is a raconteur? They said, you're a good storyteller. So I was the first witness in the first case, and I kind of laughed because he bribed a juror. And, you know, he became this megastar in New York, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So you didn't have the walking into the room thing. You were just stuck in Texas.
Yeah, stuck in Texas, right?
Wow. Blending in.
Wow. Man, what compelling stuff.
And the series is full of stuff like this. I'm almost done with it, but it's riveting. And you're right. It's quite possibly the best and most. It clarifies things. If you have questions about how things operate, it's very... it handholds you through it. So.
And it's former, maid guys and informants and FBI agents and the whole deal. And it's a 6-part event, and it starts on Sunday, and you'll be able to see it on Nat Geo. It is called Inside the American Mob. Gentlemen, thank you so much for coming by this morning. We appreciate it. Let's hear it from Michael Franzese and Sal Polisi. Guys, awesome. We're going to take a break. We'll come back. Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. Can't leave without that. Stay right there.
What's new? Why have you asked?
Cage the elephant.
Call me when you're ready to be real.
Larkin Poe. Rival Sons.
We move through the world like shooting stars across the sky.
New music, more of everything that rocks.
On 93.3 WMMR.
I'm excited about our next guest, man. He's a great actor, been in so many great movies. I was just running down the list of films that we've seen him in. The Hurt Locker.
Yeah.
Awesome movie. The Adjustment Bureau. Gets knocked out in Million Dollar Baby by Morgan Freeman. Awesome in We Are Marshall. And went up against Eminem.
Yeah.
Miles. So we're going to play this music to bring him on. And Pain and Gain is the next film. Let's welcome Anthony Mackie.
Yeah. This
morning, everybody. How you doing, man?
Well, I have to say, Kathy, your voice makes me
think traffic is okay.
Thank you.
I wish for traffic. You can deal with it every morning.
Yeah, that's cool.
I have to say that.
That's a compliment. Very cool.
Yeah, thanks for coming in today, man.
Thank you for having me, man.
What's up, Philly? Hey, and by the way, let me go to that because I know that you do have a soft spot in your heart for the Phillies. You're a fan of the Phillies.
I'm a huge Phillies fan. I have to say, when you guys won the World Series, there's footage of this somewhere. I was asked on ESPN who was going to win the World Series before the season started, and I gave a specific breakdown of why the Phillies would win the World Series, and you won.
Wow.
Yeah. Very cool. Where did your love for the Phillies start?
When I was a kid, there was this TV show called Mr. Ed.
Yes, yeah, Mr. Ed. I love the talking horse.
So Nickelodeon, there was this commercial, and they were like, "Mr. Ed, who do you spend time with when you're not on the ranch?" And he goes, "Those Phillies." And he goes, "Mr. Ed, who's your favorite baseball team?" And he goes, "Those Phillies."
is a bizarre way to come about it. But
I got
that's
a
cool.
John Kruk T-shirt. Nice. And because he was a big, fat first baseman. I love the fat guy. And I've been a Phillies fan ever since.
Are you athletic yourself? Because, I mean, obviously you're in We Are Marshall and stuff. But, I mean, do you play? Do you have any sport?
I played baseball all my life. And once I went to a school that didn't have a baseball team, I got on the Central Park, you know, over an outdated fat postman's baseball team.
That's the full name.
That's it. Bunch of 50-year-old dudes trying to get away from their wives.
I played in one of those leagues. It was a Sunday morning league. It was a lot of fun. Wooden bat.
Yeah. And there was a bucket of beer by every base. So every time you get on base, you got to drink a beer.
When you're on a set, obviously you're on an athletic movie. This movie's, by the way, congratulations. It's getting rave reviews.
Yeah,
it's a real tour de force for everyone, including Michael Bay, who's they saying this is, you know, can really show his chops in this. But when you're on a set with guys who are athletic, Do you shoot hoops? Do you play games? Do you have downtime to do that?
No, you literally do push-ups in between every take. I mean, because
for this movie, right?
Yeah, I'm usually 185, 190. For this, I got up to 213.
Wow. Right?
I mean, a lot of protein, a lot of just pushing and pulling all day. Yeah. The Rock showed up and made me look like a 12-year-old girl.
Casey and I went to Monday Night Raw here like a month ago, and The Rock was there. The man is just,
but you got to get close to him. I mean, he's 6'3", 6'4". For this, he was training for WrestleMania because they were doing it in Miami. So he got up to about 245, 250.
You don't, wow. It's impossible. You can't imagine when you see somebody like that, that humans are that big.
Yeah.
But it's astonishing.
My thing is, I have an issue. I don't know what it is. I don't know if it happened in childhood. But every time I see a man over 6 foot, I want to fight him. I don't know what it is. So he shows up, and he's like 6'4", and I'm like, I could kick his ass. I could take this
dude.
You could
kick his ass?
So every conversation, he's like, "What's up, Anthony?" I'm like, "What you trying to say, playboy? You want some of this?" But me and Mark never had a problem. He's like, "What's up, Anthony? Hey, man. How you doing?
Mark, though, and we've had him in the studio a number of times. He's a shorter guy, but man, that dude can pack on muscle. And I think he put on like 30 pounds?
Yeah, he put on a lot of muscle. He's true Bostonian right there.
I mean,
5'8", 5'9", and just all muscle.
Will you use it? Because I know he actually has a line of weight gain out.
Yeah, marked. Yeah.
Mark has a whole line of supplements and stuff.
Yeah, and that's how he got so big. He was training for that when we were doing the movie to take all the pictures and do all the interviews and stuff. So he got really wide, man. He got a lot of gains.
Casey and I saw the movie last weekend, and going into it, and I'd seen the trailer months ago, and I was looking forward to seeing the movie as soon as I saw the trailer. And so going into it, I thought that The Rock and Mark Wahlberg were the stars, and they are. But really, it's a four-piece ensemble. It's you, Anthony, The Rock, Mark Wahlberg, and Tony Shalhoub. And you guys all have, what I really liked about the movie, you all have your backstories. You all narrated at some point. So it's not just you're some ancillary character that's Mark Wahlberg's sidekick. Mm-hmm. You're a star of the movie.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's people go to movies to see Mark and Dwayne. I get that.
Yeah.
You know, I'm at a place in my career where I have more growing to do for people to go see a movie because of me. But I do have a target audience. I do have a bunch of people who go to movies just because I'm in it. So, you know, I'll be happy for those people to see this movie.
And the one thing that we got to state, and Casey and Nick were pointing out that as you watch the movie, and I desperately want to see it, we'll see it, it's a true story.
Yeah.
That what you're seeing is so mind-bogglingly, and I remember when this was breaking in the news.
Yeah.
But now you learn all the nuance and stuff, and Nick was saying there's actually a point in the movie where
a reminder pops
yeah.
up.
Yeah. All of a sudden, it's like,
right.
this is a true story. This yeah. is a reminder. Yeah. yeah.
You don't have anything to say, Kathy?
I'm just looking at this picture. Oh, it's okay. unbelievable.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, you know, really a lot of protein, a lot of baby oil. a lot of Johnson & Johnson right there. No, you know what? It's the most uncomfortable thing when you get that big, you know, because there's certain things you can't do. You know, getting off the couch is an issue. You know, you spend so much time in the bathroom. Mm-hmm. It is the most.
Because you're eating. Oh, 10 meals a day.
Yeah, you're eating 6 meals a yeah. day. So literally, as soon as you put something in, you got to let something out. And it's right. like, oh, man. No, but it's rough.
The movie, the story was told great. You know, like, I mean, you know that you're going to get pinched at some point, you know? But for some reason, and your characters are pretty reprehensible. Your character's super lovable. It's like you're the most innocent of the three. But you know they're going to get pinched at some point. But for some reason, you're just hoping everybody gets away with it. You're right. hoping that you get a
that's
little
a good
piece
sign.
Of the pie. Yeah.
That's a good sign.
But that's what's so great. Even no matter how heinous these crimes are, you want these guys to get away. And that's why it's so much fun. I mean, there's a movie called True Romance.
Yeah. yeah.
And this is in the vein of True Romance, I feel, because it's a movie about the American dream. You know?
I was reading a review that says, actually, this movie, what True Romance was to Tony Scott, who had done the big blow-up things, this is for Michael Bay. Shows that with a character-driven story and his incredible cinematic flourishes, that it can work. So, it's getting great buzz.
No, it's fun. I mean, it's a movie that works on all accords. I mean, Michael found this story 12 years ago and then, you know, worked on it for a long time, gave it to Dwayne, gave it to Mark. And then I met him 2.5 years ago. And he was like, you know, I have this idea for this story. I want you to read it and tell me what you think. So I couldn't believe it was a true story. I mean, it's so ridiculous and it's so outlandish. And if you read the actual Miami Sun-Times story, this is the PG version. Of what actually happened. I mean, these guys were so far left that you could not fathom something like this could possibly happen.
I guess it shows you what roids can do. Right?
Yeah, 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 yeah. Stay out the gym. Right. You know, it's crazy out there, man.
And they're not afraid to show what that does. I mean, there's steroids and throughout the movie, and you guys do get big. And Wahlberg drives a Fiero, a red Fiero.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So perfect.
Old school. With Scooby-Doo seat covers.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Oh, my God.
At one point, they cram you, The Rock, and Mark Wahlberg into the Fiero.
Right.
And I'm like, man, that's CGI.
We got in a big fight that day because they were like, okay, Anthony, sit on Dwayne's lap. I'm like, I'm not sitting on his lap. They're like, sit on his lap. I'm like, I'm not. I'll strap me to the top of the car. I'm not sitting on his lap. So it was. We had a lot of fun. That's actually what we were arguing about when we were doing that because we were about to get in the car. And Mark's like, yo, just sit on his lap, man. But I'm like, negative. It's not happening.
My friend had a Fiero growing up. It was the headlights. He got, oh, man, I got a Fiero. He comes driving. Up, the headlights pop up and they never went down again.
Now, my sister's boyfriend had one, and one time he was like, yo, you know, I'm gonna drop your sister off, you just take my car and go home. So, of course, I just cruised the neighborhood, right?
Turn the radio up,
sure. And I hit a pothole, and that car never ran again. Wow. Everything just fell out of the bottom.
They were legendary for that, but that shows attention to detail.
That's quality, right?
Anthony, I have to point out the fact that you're gonna step into you were talking about the progression of your career and you having a certain group of people that you know will come out to see you in a movie like every actor does, but you're about to take it to another level of fanaticism because you're going to play the Falcon, Marvel character. You are now stepping into superhero territory.
That's
pretty damn cool, man.
It's really cool. I'm excited about it. I mean, I've been hassling Marvel for like the past 5 years about Black Panther, and I was like, you got to be Black Panther. I want to be Black Panther. Make me Black Panther.
Doesn't Falcon predates Black Panther, doesn't he?
No. Falcon came after Black Panther.
Did he? Okay.
Yeah, Falcon got actually his flying capabilities from Black Panther.
Okay.
So
you know your stuff too.
Yeah. I was never a comic book guy. So when they told me about it, I called my brother and he gave me the whole spiel.
Yeah.
But you know, the Falcon had three incarnations throughout his life in the cartoon world. And basically they took all three and crammed them together and came up with the character that's in the movie, but it's pretty kick-ass.
Wow. When is production on that?
I start Monday.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm
so
doing
Chris Evans and everybody?
Chris Evans, Scarlett Johansson, Sam Jackson, Robert Redford. It's like Avengers 1.0.
Yeah.
You know, 1.5. So
will this put you together with Jeremy Renner again because he plays Hawkeye?
No, Hawkeye won't be in this.
Okay.
But hopefully, if I'm in Avengers 2,
hey!
Yeah. It'll put Jeremy and I together.
Where do you shoot? Where's the where are you going on Monday?
I'm going to LA on Monday. We shoot there for a little bit and do all the stunt stuff, and then we go to Cleveland and DC.
Cleveland,
man. Who knew?
That's where the superheroes go.
That's where we go. That's where superheroes go to die.
Now, I haven't seen the film, but Casey and Nick have. Are there any good choreographed fight scenes in Pain and Gain or that you might be involved in? Or
no, Pain and Gain, we don't fight that much. Okay. There's some pretty good dealing with dead body scenes.
Yeah.
Which I hope, I've been telling Michael, I'm like, the director's DVD cut, the original cut was like 3.5 hours.
Really?
And it was so awesome. Yeah. It's like 2.5 hours into it, you're like, this has to stop.
I have a question then. So the real life characters, were they that dumb or dumber?
No, you know, my thing is this. If you look at these guys, to get away with a crime, you have to be really smart. Mm-hmm. You know, I watch the first 48 every night, and I'm like, these guys are idiots.
Yeah, true.
You know, but to get away with a crime, you have to be somewhat intelligent. And I think these guys, they're really smart, but they got greedy.
Yeah.
And once you get greedy, I mean, they got caught because they were riding around in a dead guy's Lamborghini.
Yeah.
You know, you're riding around Miami in a purple Lamborghini. People going to start asking questions, especially when you were a trainer last week. So, you know, I wouldn't say dumb. They just got caught up in it.
You know, it's a comedy of errors. And there's a scene where the S starts to hit the fan, but your character doesn't know it yet. And you and The Rock are dancing, and he's doing push-ups on a table. And, like, all of a sudden, hell starts breaking loose around you guys. But the way that it was shot was a way that I've never seen a scene shot before. And I think it was a really cool thing that Michael Bay did. He goes from one scene where you guys are seamlessly to where the other room where Mark Wahlberg is. And I found that really innovative.
Yeah. Yeah. What Michael wanted to do, when we first got on set, I looked at The Rock and I was like, this dude is, I mean, I literally fell in love with him. Yeah. I was like, I've never seen arms this big. I just couldn't, like, he would have his makeup person come over and put baby oil on him. And I was like, I need baby oil. I was like, I need a baby oil person. Get me a baby oil person. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I hired me a baby oil person. And every time he would get baby oil, my chick would come over and put baby oil on me. So we kind of incorporated that into the story. So with that scene, he's like, so what are we going to do? And I'm like, I just love him. Just make him do push-ups. So...
Now, had you been waxed at this point? You were telling us before he came on. Explain the waxing story.
That was the last week. There was a beautiful Cuban girl on set, which Miami is famous for, and she was a professional waxer.
By the way, bodybuilders all the time are waxing.
All the time.
The body hair's got to go.
One of the biggest clients now in spas are guys getting waxed and anal bleaching.
Who knew?
Yeah. Who knew? Gotta keep it clean. Gotta keep it pretty. So, you know. So she's on set and she's talking and she's like, you know, I gotta teach Mark how to wax. And I was like, well, you know, I wanna learn how to wax.
Yeah.
So she's like, okay, well, you know, lay down and I'll wax you. And it was the most amazing and humbling experience to have a woman get a handful of your junk and look you in the eyes and say, this is going to hurt. It's so intimidatingly awesome.
Wow. So let me ask you about the Michael Bay thing, because he's such a brilliant director technically. But we hear that he's, you know, he's a bit of a taskmaster. He wants the most out of you. Did you experience that? Is that good?
Definitely. Yeah. I've never, literally, Michael Bay is a professional.
Right.
And literally, he goes from 1 to 10 in a heartbeat. And he's always prepared. So he does not suffer fools well.
Right.
So if you're not prepared, literally, he kicks you to the side and brings somebody in that can do your job. So I've never seen someone say, like, do this. And someone's like, well, I can't. He said, okay, step aside. Boom. Next person in. I think that's why he did a bad rap.
He was very nice.
Yeah,
I mean,
really good guy.
And a movie lover. But when you have budgets like the kind of budgets he's used to dealing with, there's a lot of
it's
lot
hardcore.
Of pressure.
I mean, somebody give you $200 million and say, make it happen.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, somebody give me $20 and say, make it happen. It's a problem. So, you know, I
that's
mean.
That's your waxing money.
Yeah, exactly. $35.
Before you got here earlier this morning, Preston was sort of going through your bio and going through all of the pictures. It was so funny to watch. He's like, oh, he was this guy in this.
Yeah, I forgot. I'm like, he was in Real Steel. I forgot that too. Yeah. You know,
there are a lot of smaller roles that you have, and it's like, that's who he is.
Yeah.
I forgot he was in that movie.
Yeah.
And you know what's great, though, is you, every role that I've seen you in, there's been something that I take from it. You're not just a throwaway character. It's something that you've added to it that's gone,
thanks,
made it a memorable character.
There are no small parts, right?
Well, that was going to be my question. Are the small roles, are they as cool as the bigger ones? I mean,
definitely.
It can be, yeah.
I mean, I learned early on in my career when I did 8 Mile, that movie, I had 4 lines and I was supposed to be there for 3 days. And it actually turned into what it turned into.
Wow, you became the main nemesis.
Yeah, I mean, every day, Curtis Hanson would come to me and be like, so can you rap? And I'm like, hell yeah, I can rap. You give me 24 hours, I can fly an airplane. You know? So, you know, from that, I learned you always take a small opportunity and try to build on it, you know? And the funny thing about it is the lead guy, unless you're playing Abraham Lincoln, the lead guy is never the best part.
Right,
it's
right.
always the second or third lead, because those are the guys you always remember and have the cool stuff to do.
Right.
So, you know, even with Adjustment Bureau or 8 Mile or anything, I always like playing those smaller roles because it's the most fun. And you're in 3 weeks and out in 3 weeks, you know, and that sucker got to stay there for 3 months.
Yeah.
You know, so.
They call them the character actors. The
exactly.
People come in and populate. Now, when you when you're like a Will Smith and the weight of everything is on you.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, obviously that comes with its benefits as well. But the guys who have the longest careers.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
mind you, there's just a handful of people in that Tom Hanks, Will Smith up there category. The guys who are character actors.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. And I mean, if you look at it, they call them character actors. But I feel like every year when you watch the Oscars, the best category is the best supporting actor category.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because those, you know, the best actor, you pretty much know who it's going to be. But the best supporting actor category is always the guys who give you the performances where you're like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That dude is, you know, if you look at Stanley Tucci or William H. Macy or Don Cheadle.
Christopher Waltz just won.
Same thing, right? Exactly.
Amazing.
Every year they give you these performances that are fun to see.
Yeah.
So that's what I've kind of been striving for and looking for in every project I do.
Wow.
Yeah, and they never say, that Taya Leone movie bombed, you know, when she's like,
yeah.
You know, it's the Will Smith or the Martin Lawrence, you know,
exactly.
That movie bombed.
But exactly.
Besides Pain and Gain, do you have a favorite movie that you've been in?
I would say my favorite on-set experience would have to be Real Steel. Mm-hmm. That was the most surreal experience I've had shooting a movie
really?
Because those robots were real. So you would be on set and a 9-foot-tall robot would come walking by.
Wow. How did they do that?
Well, they built them. They hired this company. The dudes built these robots, and like, 3 or 4 of them would actually move.
So they had like audio animatronics. Did they guys in them control?
No. They were remote control.
Holy
so
Christ.
It was freaky. You're standing there, you know, and it took me a few days.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm a firm believer in, you know, we created computers. The Matrix is real.
Right.
So, so I'm like, yo, I'm not getting within 5 feet of this robot because he's going to snap and kill everybody in the room. You know, so I'm going to just chill over here. But it was, Real Steel was probably the most surreal experience I've ever had. But as far as fun,
yeah.
Nothing will ever touch 8 Mile. I mean, that was my first time I got per diem. I mean, that was the first time anything, you know, it was those battle scenes and the way it was shot and everything about it. Just being in Detroit at that time and being associated with Eminem.
Yeah.
Was the greatest experience anyone.
He was at the pinnacle.
Yeah.
It was, everyone was sort of like, oh, is this going to be a real deal? Is this going to be like a Purple Rain? What is this going to be like? It was I was not the biggest Eminem fan at that time. When the movie came out, I was like, okay.
Yeah. And he was such a cool dude. He literally let everybody know in town that we were made men. So everywhere we went, people were like, hey, oh, let this guy in.
Right.
You know, so it was. Wow. It was a surreal experience, and we got per diem. I mean, somebody come to you every Wednesday and be like, yo, my man, it's $400. Do whatever you want with that. It's all good. You know?
Yeah.
So it was,
God,
there's nothing
awesome.
Like that.
Dude, I could talk to you all day. because now I want to ask you about Clint Eastwood and working on Million Dollar Baby. Real quick about that. I've heard, and we have actually heard, that a lot of Clint Eastwood's style is kind of a one-take thing.
Yeah.
Like well, just, all right, here are the lines, here's the setting, let's go. All right, got it, done. Was it like that?
Definitely.
Wow.
The only time it was like we would show up on set and we would rehearse. And the first day I showed up, we were doing a scene where we were basically hazing Hillary Swank. It was Michael Pena and I, who's another amazing actor. And, you know, he's like, all right, done, turn around. And I was like, yo, Clint, that was rehearsal. Can I get another one? And he goes, all right, everybody take a break. Anthony, let me talk to you for a minute.
Oh.
And I'm like, shit, I'm getting fired. Clint is going to fire me. Dirty right. Harry's going to take me outside and let me go. Right? So he goes, you're a good actor. I'm like, thanks. He was like, I watched your tape and, you know, I hired you because you're a good actor. I said, oh, thanks, man. And he said, well, if you're bad, it's because of me.
Okay.
I'm like, oh, okay. Okay. He's like, so
moving on? I say, yeah, moving on. Let's go to the next setup. Let's do it. And
so,
that was
so
it.
He's basically saying, I have trust in you. You're not here by accident.
Exactly. And you deserve to be here.
And,
you
know? The actors, the other actors we talked to, the worked with him, said that you're, you know, like, there was stories of Brando would just, they'd hand him the page or tape the dialogue on something, or, you know.
And, yeah, well, he was drunk. So.
Yeah. But, you know, like, just to get that real, here's how I'm saying it, way.
But you have to know, Morgan Freeman is a bully.
Is he?
He was literally every time we would do a take, and he made Clint Eastwood do it over and over again. And he was punching me for real.
Really?
And if you watch the scene, every time he would punch me, he would laugh. And he would go, pow, pay your dues. Pow, pay your dues. And I'm like, this dude is beating me up, and no one cares. No one. At the end of the day, I was like, Morgan Freeman just beat me up, and no one's saying anything. You know? I'm like, that's not cool. So to this day, every time I see Morgan Freeman, he looks at me, he goes, huh? You want some more? This is awful, man.
I'm gonna kick your ass.
Exactly. And that's who he's a bully, man. Right. He's a bully.
Wow. All right, well, listen, the movie is out on Friday. It's getting rave reviews.
Yeah.
Our own have seen it here and said it's an awesome movie. I'm gonna get out and see this flick, so make sure that you do check it out. It's got some heavyweights and the names to lead at the box office, but it's the goods from what we understand, which is really cool.
Just think spandex and baby oil.
All right.
That's it.
And
that's
waxing.
It.
And
think waxing.
For part of that, Anthony was completely shorn in the and comfortable. Loving every minute of it. Man, it's been a pleasure to meet you. You're a very charismatic, very cool guy, and we appreciate
Thank you
coming
for
today.
Having me. I appreciate it. Let's go Phillies. Go
Anthony Mackie. And he's the Phillies fan. Yeah. Anthony Mackie. All right. We got to take a break. We'll come back in just a second. Stay right where you are.
Everything that rocks includes cool MMR swag you can wear. Available now in the MMR Rock Shop.
Like t-shirts, hoodies, and tank tops.
With designs from retro MMR logos to the latest from the Preston and Steve Show branded hats and tops for guys and gals. All with the MMR attitude you expect.
Plus a few things to keep your pie hole happy, like coffee mugs and masks.
Search the word shop at WMMR.com and get shopping. Stuff for you, gifts for them. 93.3 WMMR. Everything that rocks your wardrobe.
Our next guest is ready to go, promoting the movie Rush.
So, definitely want to see this.
Yeah, the world of Formula One racing. Looks pretty intense.
And Ron Howard at the director's helm.
Yeah, but we geek out a little bit on Thor.
Yes,
obviously. Awesome beyond belief. Let's welcome, ladies and gentlemen, Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah. Yeah.
This morning, Chris. Good morning, sir.
Good morning. How's it going?
Wonderful. How are you?
I'm doing very good.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, let's dive right into Rush before we start comic geeking out on you.
Sure.
You know what? I was reading the story behind the rivalry, the two people that are featured in this film.
It's a true story.
Yeah. And I, you know what? It's a little before my time. It was 1976-ish. I do remember from my childhood, Jackie Stewart in the world of racing. But this was I mean, these guys were the absolute.
This was the Jimmy Connors, John McEnroe rivalry of Formula One, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And it was right at the height of the, you know, the glamour and glory of Formula One. It was sexy, and these guys were absolute rock stars, and the danger too. You know, a number of them were dying a year in the 70s.
I think it was like two or three would die per racing season, correct?
Yeah. Which there was a 20% chance each time these guys got in the car that they were they wouldn't, you know, come back out, and they live with that looming threat of death. You know, it's a pretty intense kind of statistics.
It's astonishing. I mean, you talk rightly so about these guys were of a rock star level. You actually look like a rock star with the flowing blonde hair and everything. Ron Howard got his start directing. I think he started doing car chase movies, low budget stuff for Roger Corman. He loves this stuff clearly, and he did for Cinderella Man. He brought a reality to boxing that we hear he brings to Formula One racing with Rush.
Oh, absolutely, and he said the same thing about you know, when he did Apollo 13, or just being so scared about showing it to the space NASA community,
right?
And it's the same deal when he showed it to the Formula One community. He got the same response, which is standing ovation and huge applause and such an affection about what he had done. And that's his thing. He doesn't need to be, you know, a lifelong fan of a subject to be able to focus on it and tell the story.
Right.
He's just, you know, he knuckles down and has an obsession about making it authentic. But making it appeal to people outside that industry. And then that was, you know, it kind of transcended the Formula One world, as, you know, as Apollo 13 did with the space community.
Hey, Chris, I'm sure that, you know, in playing James Hunt, you, in while filming the movie, had to, you know, or got the opportunity to get behind the wheel of a real Formula One car and drive it around a little bit. But I'm curious if they have two-seaters, and did they put you in one with a professional driver and really take you out for a spin?
I had a couple of the precision drivers as our sort of intro take us around a track in the UK, and it was intense, man. You driving the things, you absolutely understand kind of the addiction, and you go, wow, you know, all this power at your fingertips, and you feel every vibration. But when you're sitting in the car with one of these guys, and this wasn't a Formula One car, it was some other souped up vehicle, but the speed these guys attack corners with and what have you, every second you're thinking, that's it, we're dead.
We're not
gonna come out of this, you know?
And apparently they employed all sorts of new technology to capture it as effectively as they did. With this, when you're traveling at that sort of speed, do you pussy out, as it were? Do you say, slow down? I mean, did you have any moments where you're like, oh my God, okay, this is too much?
Oh, there were certainly moments where, I think, you know, when we were driving ourselves, or when I was driving, and you start to sort of go, this could go horribly wrong if I don't kind of...
Sure. I mean, it's natural.
And you start to buy into your own hype of, oh yeah, I'm playing a race car driver. I am that guy. I have the skill level, and
right,
quickly reminded that you don't, you know?
Hey, Chris, I have to admit that I will, with my children from time to time, invoke Thor. If they're squabbling, if they're bitching about something, I swear I will turn to them and go, you humans are so petty. And I got to throw it at them.
It works? How did I respond to that?
Oh, they laugh at it. You know, I mean, it does absolutely nothing, but I get a kick out of it.
Good.
No, but what a cool character to play. And obviously you got another Avengers movie down the road. What's the status of that?
We finished Thor 2, which comes out this November, and then we go straight, you'll come February next year, we start Avengers. And I haven't read the script yet. I don't know that it's completely finished, but I'm as excited as I think everybody else. You know, I became a fan of that whole world and the comic world and that story, and which is strange when you're that close to it, but you can't not help but get swept up in it, you know, especially with that group of people.
Oh, and the coming attractions for the second one look phenomenal, and the reviews on Rush have been stellar. So things are on fire for you.
Yeah, thank you, mate. Ron and I were talking about it, and he just said, you know, you get one of these or two of these in your career where people appreciate, you know, or have such an affection for a film, and I just feel so lucky to be a part of this with Rush. It's crazy.
And what else are you doing now if you don't start filming the Avengers in February?
Yeah, I just did a movie with Michael Mann. It was a
he's great.
It shot all through Hong Kong, Kuala Lumpur, Jakarta. And that was fantastic. And then jumped straight into another film with Ron Howard called In the Heart of the Sea, which is based on the true events that inspired Herman Melville to write Moby Dick.
That is an unbelievable story. There was a true, a lot of people don't know this, Chris, but there was a true story attached to a whale ramming a ship. And that's fantastic. That's got to be amazing. So. I'm just going to be seeing a lot of Chris Hemsworth movies, apparently.
You'll be sick of me, mate. Not already.
Awesome. Well, we're big fans. Thanks, Chris. And we'll look for Rush in theaters.
Thanks so much, guys.
You got to take care. Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah.
Everybody. Wow. Awesome. I loved Thor. I really, of the whole Marvel movies, that was the one going into it. I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to like this or not. I loved it.
Yeah.
It was fun. And his over-the-top bravado as Thor just sold it all the way around.
He's got it. He's got the screen presence.
You may have seen our next guest in everything.
literally.
He's been in tons of stuff.
Yeah.
From movies to TV to commercials. And last night, Brooklyn Nine-Nine was on Fox. And Andre Brower and Andy Samberg, nice cast.
Yeah.
This gentleman, one of the stars. Please welcome Mr. Terry Crews.
Yay!
back to be here. Philadelphia.
I love Philadelphia, man.
How you doing, bud?
It's all good. It's good.
And a former member of the Philadelphia Eagles. That's as
me.
Well.
That's me, man.
Did you have a good time while you were here?
Yeah, you know, it was kind of sad. Yeah. I ain't gonna lie. I was in the Holiday Inn across from Veterans Stadium on Christmas Day.
Oh boy.
All by myself. I remember I got cut from the Redskins sitting out, and there I was. I got picked up. I was able to be there with Ray Rhodes and the guys for the playoffs, and we got beat by the 49ers that year, and I was sent home. That was the extent of my whole Philadelphia.
But then
here
comes acting to save your life.
Sometimes
basically,
getting
right?
fired is the best thing that can ever happen to you.
Yeah, right. You know what? All right, so Joe Flacco's wife had a baby. My wife's like, "Oh, Joe Flacco's wife just had a baby a half hour ago. Do you think he's going to play?" I go, he's the highest paid quarterback in the NFL. Of course he's going to play. Unfortunately,
yeah,
the baby and everything else, when you're an NFL football player, I mean, you really have to have some really extenuating circumstances to miss a game.
No, you have to act like you care about the rest of your life. That's really, you do. You're like, man, my mama died, but I'll be in practice tomorrow. I mean, I swear to you, man, you have to go through that whole. And you know what the weird thing is? I'm about to tell on a lot of people. It's kind of crazy.
All right. Let it go.
The weird thing is after a loss, you have to do the sad face.
Yeah.
You have to be like, oh, man, this is a mess. And you go get that check the next day, you see people like, yeah! What up, man? What are you doing now?
You're so spot on because they've all got that look. They've got the road answers. They've got the deal. But
they should hand out Oscars in the locker room.
Yeah. You know what's so funny? When I watch the press conferences, I will think that. I'm like, does he even really care?
Yeah.
No. I'm here to reveal this to you, man. I'm going to let the best known secret out, period.
Yeah.
And especially, you know, we did it for the city. We did it for the fans.
I know.
And this check right here.
All I got to say is Monday night, just check them out. They're twerking somewhere, okay? And they just lost.
That's so funny.
What do you think about that Hard Knocks series on HBO? Do you watch any of that?
I watch it, man. You know, it's one of those things. I got mad when they cut Ocho Cinco and they put the camera in the meeting when they cut him. I thought,
That's brutal.
You know what? Hey, man, be careful, man, because people go postal right now, dude.
Yeah,
that's a very sensitive thing. Can you imagine a camera at your workplace when the guy fires you and then they just put it out? And, you know, just because you signed your contract, they can put that out anywhere.
Yeah.
That's kind of wrong, dude. I was like, who signs up for that? You signed up to play football. You didn't sign up for that.
Did that resonate, though, as being accurate to your experience overall?
Totally accurate, dude. They bring you in because it's a psychological thing, man. You know, they sit you down in front of the coach. The coach tells you, he's like, you know, everything you did was wonderful. We just had to move in another direction. You're like, and you're still like in a weird space because you realize, I don't have a job. Right. I don't know where I'm going. Yeah. This is my whole life. I've been playing football since I was a baby. What do I do now? And you know, and then they kick the guys out. They got to do a better job with the transition, man. And
Hard Knocks is hard to watch, but
I can't stop watching it.
Yeah,
you've done the classic. You've done a great story. You can serve as inspiration because I mean, you leave the comfort of what you were used to go into acting. You're on Brooklyn Nine-Nine with Andre Brower.
Yes,
I know. One of the great actors.
When he signed on, I was like, dude, I got to become a better actor, dude. I got to take some acting classes.
But I mean,
he's great.
When you first started acting, and you've been in against some big heavyweights. Were you terrified? How did you deal with that?
Because this is the thing, man. I remember I did my first movie with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
The first thing I ever did, it was called The Sixth Day. And when I had to turn to him,
it's a pretty good movie, by the way.
Yeah. When I turned to him and said a line, nothing came out of my mouth. I was like, oh my God, this is Arnold. And see, you're scared of the judges. You're scared of everyone saying, you suck, you don't belong here, it's no good. And so what happens is you freeze. And that's what happened. And you know what? At the last second, something went wrong with the camera. And they were like, oh, we got to reload. We got to do something. I was like, oh, my. And I pulled myself to the side. I was like, dude, this is the only chance you got. You better go in there and you tell Arnold what's up. Man, we went back to that scene. I was like, hey, Arnold, what's up, man? He was like, this guy's very good. I like him. He has a lot of energy. He's good.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome.
Well, we've had you here before, though, Terry, and you were such a nice guy and so exuberant and just fun to be around. And my favorite show was The Newsroom, and when I saw you on that, I cheered. Like I was happy to see you
in a great role like that, you know? So I think it's one of the, you're one of those guys that people do root for, you know? And when you show up on screen, I think, at least myself, we're happy about it, you know? That must have been a cool experience.
It was awesome. I actually read with Aaron Sorkin. I mean, he's the quintessential writer.
Dialogue-wise, you're in a premium class when you're dealing with Aaron Sorkin.
And let me tell you, you can't say one line out of place. They were like, excuse me, I'm sorry. You said we, it was they.
Yeah.
And you just did like a whole like freaking you know, speech. And you're like, oh, we got to do that again? Seriously? But he was amazing. But the thing is, I like to try everything. I don't mind auditioning. I don't mind going. A lot of actors get to a place where they're like, oh, no, I don't want to audition anymore. My thing is, I want you to know that you want me.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Well, that's why you work so much. I mean, your love is apparent. Also, Arrested Development.
Again,
another intricate thing you have with Brooklyn Nine-Nine. You have the people behind Parks and Recreation.
That's right.
Also, sharp dialogue. But your chops are there. How did you come to be a part of Brooklyn Nine-Nine?
Wow, it was. I had a meeting with Dan Gore and Mike Shore, who created Parks and Recreation like a while back, and they were big fans of Idiocracy, the movie where I was President Camacho.
What's your full name? It's one of the greatest names.
Dwayne Elizondo Mountain Dew Herbert Camacho.
I love that movie.
I mean, I had little Will Ferrell comes up to me like, President Camacho. Oh my God. And Jack Black's like, Camacho, come on. So all the comedians, it's funny. I have fans in different circles. Like I go to church, they're like, everybody hates Chris, baby. You were so wonderful on that show. You know? And then I got my Camacho fans. Yeah. And then you got the White Chicks fans at the mall. And they're like, sing the song. You know? And it's weird. And then I got the Longest Yard gives me the sports fans. And Expendables gives me the guys, you know? Yeah. So it's really a cool mix. Everywhere I go, I have a different, you know, a different scene. And
so they were fans of Idiocracy.
They were fans of that, and then we got on. It's weird because once I found out Andy Samberg was on, I was in.
Yeah,
because you're only as good as the people you work with.
Right.
I mean, truthful. I've been blessed to work with Chris Rock, Eddie Murphy, Adam Sandler, and now I knew this is the new hot superstar kid coming fresh out of SNL.
Yeah,
and I said, man, I'm ready to roll, dude. It's really like a team mentality. And I said, I need to get with a great ensemble. Just like, you develop a dream team. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You got it.
Well, speaking of ensemble, I mean, the whole Tuesday night lineup on Fox is pretty awesome. And I watched all 2 hours of it leading up to the 10 o'clock news. But talking about your ensemble and the different layers of character, because obviously your character is going to be Sergeant. You know, your stature and all that sort of stuff. But the reality is you're scared, you know? And the one scene in the show last night is when Andy Samberg's character gets put on desk duty, and you're like, oh, man, that seems like a great gig. Because you're scared to be out on the field.
That's the truth.
Yeah.
There's a scene where you... We learn why you are off active duty. If people have DVR'd it, I don't want to give it away, but I howled in the sequence. It shows you probably shouldn't be carrying a sidearm.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's very...
So you got this big macho-looking man on the outside, but you're a scared little person.
Well, you know what? Let me tell you, that kind of sensitivity is me. I ain't going to lie. Even when I was in the NFL, it was wild because I was always nervous that I would break my neck, get hurt. Yeah. I have 5 kids.
Yeah.
And you turn around and you don't want to be in a wheelchair.
Right.
Because you just changed the fate of your whole family for the rest of their life. And now, do that times 100 being a cop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you're at a traffic stop and you don't know what this guy's about to do. Can you imagine? I mean, the family doesn't know whether your father's coming home or not. You have to deal with that kind of thing. But we deal with real cop issues, but in a funny way.
Yeah.
I mean, here I was a guy who worked my way into being a super cop, but now I'm like, man, this is crazy. I got kids. What am I doing?
I love the whole Andre Brower conceit too. He's a police captain. He's trying to make a name for himself because he's openly gay, and the way he is, he's such a commanding presence.
It's gravitas.
Yes. Yeah. When you're acting with him, do you find you're like, oh, wow, I'm watching this dude?
It was wild because, you know, I was sitting there like, oh, man, we got to come with it. This is like Sir Alec Guinness.
Yeah.
And what's so weird, he's a goofball.
Is he?
I mean, Andy and I tried to check him. We were like, let's see. We were like, dude, this is the guy from Glory.
Yeah. You know,
let's sing the song. Oh, my Lord.
We have it.
And we just started doing that. And then all of a sudden, Andre looks and says, what's going on? And we're like, I'm sorry. Then Andre busted, oh, my Lord. And we're like, okay, now we can't stop him from singing.
Lord!
Yeah, that's it.
Great scene.
Greatest scene ever.
When Terry Crews comes to do the show, Lord, make sure he can do his lines against Andre Brown. Because it's going to be tough. He's the Alec Guinness of Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Ooh. Don't make him fall like a house of cards, Lord.
but now we can't stop Andre from singing. Right. Now we're like, Andre, that's enough, Andre. Oh, Andre, man. Stop. Okay.
So, you know, the thing with this show, and it's the same thing with Parks and Rec and ensembles, and it is an exemplary ensemble. As the show progresses, you get to find the different, you have different characters, and you see how they start to mesh. It's already started. And I saw, it was a coming attraction. It appeared to be you asleep in the middle of a pull-up?
I'm not even going to give that one away.
Okay.
This is the great thing about what we have built. Because the good thing is, even with Parks and Recreation, it started slow.
Yeah.
With The Office, it started slow. We just introduced the characters last night. That was it.
Yeah.
That was it. A half hour, just this guy. Yeah. And then you decide whether you want to hang with us for the rest of the go. And it's a workplace comedy. It's not a cop show like you would think. Okay. And it's not a spoof, but we are having so much fun. There's so much to discover, and you learn a little bit more about everybody every
Love
week.
Love that. And cops, because we were talking about the show like Barney Miller from years ago.
Yes.
Police just love that show because it addresses their experience, you know? So it's very cool. Movie-wise and stuff, you mentioned Expendables. What's it like, I mean, in that collective, with those dudes, you have some of the legendary badasses. Who's the real badass amongst that collective?
Wow, you know what? It's wild, man, because everybody has their strengths. When I see, I used to think Randy Couture, because Randy could kick all our asses.
Yeah.
Okay,
he's the real deal.
That's a definite. That is already done. But Jason Statham survived two near-death experiences on the movie. I couldn't believe it.
Really?
Watching him, he was driving a truck and went over the dock into the Black Sea. In the truck, he's in it, and it goes to the ocean. And then he gets out like, yeah, let's shoot again. I was like, this is a bad dude. And I'm like, I ain't doing that. You know
what I mean? I got five kids. Yeah.
You got to put some pads on me. And we got a 100-yard field. I'll be the man.
Right.
But it's wild. And then you look at Stallone, and you look at, this is one of the, I mean, he is a force of nature.
Yes.
To watch what he does, you're like, man, you can't compete with this kind of like stick-to-itiveness.
He seems like a good dude.
Oh, he is. Yeah. No, sly. He suffers no fools though. I've seen him like, get out of here, get out of my face. You know.
Right.
But you turn around and he's the sweetest guy. If you work hard for him, he will bust his ass for you.
Yeah.
That's what I love it. And I'm just privileged and honored to be a part of this great group, man. I just finished Expendables 3. One of the biggest things in my life, I got to hang and hang out with Wesley Snipes. Wesley's in the new one.
Is he really?
That's
Wesley's
awesome.
Back, man. Nice. All right. Wesley is back.
They swapped out Bruce Willis, apparently, for Harrison Ford.
Now Harrison Ford is in it. Just like Kelsey Grammer is in it now. Harrison Ford, Mel Gibson is
Kelsey
our main
Grammer?
Villain. Yeah, he just signed on. Dude.
You remember that great action series, Frasier?
No, The Expendables is the halfway house of Hollywood.
Yeah.
If you've ever done anything bad, just come on over. It's like the Raiders.
You know what I mean?
Just come on through. You know what I mean? It's
the Expendables are the Raiders.
You got a problem? You coming out of jail? Come on. Yeah.
How's Wesley doing, man? We haven't seen him in a long, long time, yeah?
He's totally
in good shape all that.
He's ready, man.
He's one of the best
actors ever, man. He's still good. You can't take away somebody's ability, no matter what they've done. And you know, he's ready to come back. He's ready to make a move.
You have to be a Blade fan, right?
I love Blade. We really put together the best of the best, and only Sly could do that.
Just one word of advice: don't use Wesley's accountant.
That's the big thing he told me.
You can bet on Black, but don't bet on his account. Terry, we're so glad you had a chance to come by here this morning. Don't miss Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Andy Samberg, Andre Brower, and Mr. Terry Crews. Thank you, Terry.
Thank you, guys. Thank you, Steve.
We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back. Stay there.
Love Preston and Steve and WMMR? Check out WMMR.com for more of everything that rocks.
Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro, get personalized deals on the products you buy most, and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy, and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors. Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro, get personalized deals on the products you buy most, and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy, and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors.
Back with more of the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
Now, bizarre. WMMR presents bizarre. Preston and Steve's Bizarre File.
Brought to you by Dietz & Watson, your local Dietz & Watson. Real Philly delis are open for takeout. Taste four generations of family recipes made with love and show your support for local business. RealPhillyDeli.com, Dietz & Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Beware of the monkeys. Hundreds of rare wild monkeys, some carrying herpes.
Herpes!
Whoa. Are on the loose in Florida after a tour guide brought these spunky critters to this long ago.
Don't mind the sore on my lip.
Wildlife officials... said that three pair of rhesus monkeys were transported to a park near Ocala in the 1930s by tour operator Colonel Tui after a Tarzan flick sparked a fascination with the creatures.
I'm Colonel Tui. I have a whole bunch of herpes-ridden monkeys. What can I do with them?
The breed has since boomed, and more than 1,000 of the monkeys now live in the state.
I had no idea that monkeys could get herpes.
Officials have caught more than 700 of the monkeys in the past decade, most of which test positive for the herpes B virus.
You know where they trace it back to, Preston? State Road Sally.
State Road Stacy.
Yeah.
They made her way.
State Road Stacy. She used to have a discount rate for monkeys.
Wildlife officials now consider the monkeys a public health hazard. The monkeys were first marooned on a small island near the Silver River, but the creatures learned to swim.
We learned to swim, and that's how we escaped. It's quite a story.
They have since been spotted hundreds of miles away.
She signed a deal with Paramount.
Near Jacksonville. The monkeys eat dirt and spiders.
We eat dirt and spiders. Wash it down with Thunderbird.
Wow.
Mostly dirt and spiders, you know. Nothing too spicy. Monday, Wednesday, Friday, dirt. Tuesday, Thursday, spiders. The two major food groups, dirt and spiders.
Why dirt, though?
To wash down the spiders.
Yeah, come on.
To help you digest the spiders. Do I have to spill out everything?
I guess, yeah. I didn't know you could eat dirt.
Oh, you can.
And spiders.
I'm sorry, Casey.
It must be the herpes. You have the coughing herpes.
Yeah. The monkeys eat dirt and spiders and live near rivers. So that's where they look for them, I guess.
What a life.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Ooh, what a great day. I'm going to eat me some dirt, hang out by the river, throw my poop.
Throw back some spiders.
I need a file of facts to put all this stuff in.
A father who was caught having sex with a Land Rover while on a night out has been banned from going out on the weekend.
All right.
At least do the right thing and marry it.
This is out of England. A court heard how drunken Daniel Cooper stripped off while he was with friends. The father of three was seen urinating in the street before walking with his trousers round his ankles and his T-shirt pulled over his head.
I say, what's your name?
He then shocked fellow revelers by walking into a kebab shop.
A kebab shop?
They're very popular in England.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, what was that?
Kebab.
Oh, gotcha. Walked into a shop and simulated sex with the counter of the restaurant.
Look at all I can do.
Cooper decided, as being a caring family man, then dropped to the floor and began humping it. He then left the shop and gyrated against a Land Rover that was parked nearby. Cooper says he was so drunk he doesn't remember what happened until he saw some of the security footage and pictures of his actions. Police arrested him following his actions. He told officers he was not used to drinking and had gone out with only $20 in his pocket.
Wait till a Land Rover shows up on his front door with a Mini Cooper and a blanket.
He was given a three-month community order, which bans him from going outdoors between 7 p.m. and 7 a.m. on Friday, Saturday, Sunday nights for the next 3 months.
You've got to be wildly drunk to hump a Land Rover.
Yeah, and not remember anything,
too. I mean, they're far sexier cars.
Yes. And there you go. That is what I have in the bizarre file right now. We'll take a break. We'll be right back. Stay down.
Monday nights just got a lot louder. Join MMR's Jackie Bam Bam for massive amounts of Metallica every Monday night starting at 9. Yeah. From the monster hits to deeper album cuts, spanning a Hall of Fame career, we're covering all the bases from one of rock's biggest bands. Check out WMMR.com for more from Metallica. Rock news, videos, and interviews with MMR DJs.
So true, Jackson.
The new and improved Metallica Mondays. 9 p.m. with Jackie Bam Bam. 93.3 WMMR. Everything that rocks.
I just had a typical guy moment with my wife, and this falls under the category of either stupid things that guys say or what not to say to a woman.
You were mentioning this, and we said specifically, don't tell us until we're on air, because it apparently was a bit of a doozy.
Yeah, it was just dumb.
Well, you
just
did one stupid. You did one time ask her if she was on the rag.
Well, that was in a fight.
I didn't even ask. I said, you're just pissed off because you're on your period right now.
Right, so you knew.
Oh, gentlemen, no. Never.
What did you say?
I don't care how cool your wife is. You never
ever.
Say that one.
That
These
is,
are just little lessons that we learn as we go along in life.
There's no way around it.
Mm-hmm.
That's just it. You cannot just steer clear of that territory. Any reference to the period, to riding the red wave, your Aunt Flo, stay away from it.
What do you think the percentage is over the years of any women that have heard a comment like that from their man and kind of brushed it off?
You know, you're right. I think it's my period.
Yeah.
That must be what's contributing to my hormonal imbalance and my anger towards you. It's not that you're a dick.
I would tear your eyes out.
I doubt there's ever been a woman that has ever let that slide.
You raise an interesting point.
Right.
But if that truly is the case, I don't understand why you're so mad.
You can't. You can't.
I know. Right?
No,
you just can't go there.
No, it absolutely is the case. That is the reason. But it just makes you. It makes you even more mad.
It's throwing gas on the fire.
I will get so angry. Like even over. Things that I do, like that my husband doesn't do or whoever, and I want to like punch something, and I'm and then I think to myself, oh right,
yeah,
okay.
But if he were to tell you that,
no, I would punch him.
Exactly. Yeah. All right, so this was not that bad.
Not at the you have your period level.
No, but it was
but
just,
stupid enough
as it was leaving my mouth, as it came out of my mouth, I'm like, why did you just say that?
No.
But fortunately she was cool about it and she thought it was funny. My wife, as you may have heard on the show before, is a well endowed woman. Okay, so she's, I think we had the bra whisper in. They said she's a 36F.
Yeah.
So she's got...
like F and A.
Exactly, man. F and A. Look at those cans. So anyhow...
I actually one time was, unbeknownst to me, feeling your wife up because I thought it was her arm extended out.
Wait, really?
Yeah, we're at the FOP Lodge and everyone's tight and I'm putting my hand out on what I believe is her arm. It's her knocker. Mm-hmm. And she goes, you're touching my boob. Mm-hmm. And it's a very nice for show. And oh my... And I was like...
Oh my God!
So we were gonna go shopping, and she had some bras that she needed to return.
Yeah,
and I wanted to go to one particular store, and she needed to return these. She bought these online; they didn't fit.
Okay,
so she wanted to return them to Lane Bryant. Okay, so she's well endowed; she has to buy her bras from Lane Bryant. She's not a big girl,
no,
right?
Just she's tall.
And by the way,
she's got big
just
boobs.
To help you here.
You can already tell this is going.
Yeah, I know exactly where
well,
it's going.
I know where it's going. Lane Bryant actually is what most women are.
Oh, yeah.
It's an it's an unreal thing because of a male-dominated society that we believe that women should be a size one.
Right.
When in fact,
real women
are 12
look like they are at Lane Bryant. Thank you.
But Lane Bryant is a plus size
clothing it's
store.
A normal
no,
size.
No, it's a store for beautiful women.
No, but I'm just saying that's the description of it.
Trying to help him here. Yeah.
All right, so we were trying to decide whether or not there was a Lane Bryant at the Philadelphia Premium Outlets, which is not too far from us, because the other store that I wanted to go to was there. And she's like, I'm not sure if there's a store there or not. And then here's what I said. Okay. I go, no, you know what? There is a Lane Bryant there because I remember being there with you shopping. And while you were shopping, I was looking at the pictures of the fat models.
Dude.
Oh,
I know. Oh, so right as it left my mouth, I'm like, why did I just say that? And she goes, oh, so I shop at a fat woman's store, huh?
And you basically said the equivalent of saying she shops at Casual Male.
I could tell by her tone that she thought it was funny, but it dragged on the entire week. I kept hearing about it.
Don't you remember, honey, how you
kept hearing about
it? We went
it.
To the store, you went into the cattle chute, you were next in line. You remember? You remember the cowboy sat on your back and you bolted out?
Oh, God.
Well,
and
fortunately, it wasn't that time of the month. That's why you got it.
Yes.
Pass.
You would have had your sack ripped right off.
Yeah. And I think we had already done the nasty that morning anyway. So
she was happy.
Together
happy.
Or with other people?
No, just together. There were no other people involved.
Oh, man.
All right. Here's another one. Let me go to Derek because I've said this before, too.
Oh, no.
I've said them all, man. I'm an idiot.
You're the worst.
You're still married.
Yeah, I know, right?
And happily married.
Let me go to Derek. Hey, Derek, how you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
Good. Right. What's happening, man?
I guess it was about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and this was my biggest mistake because it was about 3 or 4 days before my wife gave birth.
Oh, boy.
Oh, God.
So yeah.
We got into a little bit of an argument, and I don't know how it happened, but it slipped out. I said, stop acting like your mother.
Oh, dude, yes. And Derek, I didn't know. I when I said, and this was to an old girlfriend of mine, I said, you're acting just like your mom, because she hates you. Her and her mom would bicker and fight all the time. I'm like, you're acting just like your mom. Oh, my God.
Let me tell you something. Even if the girl gets along with her mother and loves her mother, it's never a compliment for some reason.
No, she doesn't want to be like her mother.
It's never a compliment.
Yeah, so, Derek, what kind of wrath did you face after that?
Oh, I had no idea who the woman was that was standing in front of me. At the
Face contorts.
Yeah.
And I was like, I'm sorry, I didn't mean it. And it was too late. It was way too late.
And that goes into a repository, and it'll be 30 years from now.
Yeah.
And that will get pulled out as if it was freshly said.
Yes. That will be saved.
Oh, yeah.
We'll file that one.
Is there an equivalent of what we could say to you guys?
Because
guys are cool.
No, that's a good question, because I was trying to think of that. What would be the tipping point of
what
no, you didn't? You know, I can't think of anything that would be said to a guy that would be on that level of you just pushed it too far.
My wife and I came to an agreement on certain things. The way she would correct me if I was doing something wrong around the house. It usually has to do with cleaning, not to the way she would like it done.
Yeah.
So we literally had to change the verbiage used to... Did you do that?
Oh, you had to agree upon this
yes,
verbiage?
Yes, but I implemented part of this, too, to should I do that?
Okay.
Because...
Instead of let me
do that. Here, let me do that.
Yeah.
Here, let me do that.
Yeah.
I can do that. I know. What you're saying is I can do that better than you, jerk off.
Sure. Yeah.
That's what's being said.
Yeah.
And that's what she'd say to me. So
now she says, did you...
And I say to her, I don't say, did you feed the cats? Should I feed the cats?
Oh, you turn it back on yourself.
And then she has the option of saying, right. So,
okay.
But man,
say, no, I already fed them.
Those little verbal things.
Good idea.
Those little verbal things will drive you out of your mind, because she hates the way I clean the house. If our cat vomits on me, should I clean this up, honey? I'll get it.
I can't even look at it. I don't want it stuck in me.
That's just ran by itself, but yeah.
What the hell was it?
The machine ran by itself. It's part of the deal. It's part of the upgrade that allows things to run by itself.
All right, anyway.
And it's just, do you have that at home? I mean, I can clean, but it's never to the standard.
No, the cleaning thing. I mean, I have issues with some things that she does, which I've never understood, and I've just given up on.
Pick your battles, because...
Oh, yeah.
Because let me tell you something. Could you put this, you know, in the kitchen? There are certain things that need to be done. My wife will leave with cats in the house, 7 cats in the house, a half-eaten plate of food up on the counter.
They're going to get to that.
I get vilified for leaving not fully clean cat food cans mm-hmm. on the counter. She's leaving a buffet for them. Right. The only thing missing is you know, they're there with bibs on, eating.
Right, right.
But I can't bring that up because it ain't going to fly.
The only issue I had, and I tried it years ago, and I just gave up on it. And it's a little thing. Like you said, pick your battles. But it's when cleaning the kitchen, my wife will immediately sweep up the floor first. When there's stuff all over the counters, crumbs and all this stuff, I'm like, it's going to end up on the floor. Let's do the counters first.
And then do
then you do the floor. I was a dishwasher. I had to clean up kitchens for a living for a while. I know that's the order, the process that it goes in. I tried, and it's still to this day.
Like
so I gave up on it.
Showering feet up, that makes no sense. You know, you shower head down.
Well, I got called on something. I don't leave the little trap in the sink, mm-hmm. you know, that catches the stuff.
Yep.
Because, again, she'll put plates with food in the sink instead of scraping it off into the garbage and then putting it in the sink.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, well,
then don't do that.
It goes down the drain. It's not in there. Yeah. So I'm like, okay, honey, I'll remember to do that.
Hang on, let me go to Brian. Going back to things that you've said that are the wrong thing to say, and we're still looking for something that a girl could say to
him. You know what? It's a good. I'm perplexed by that one.
Let me go to Brian. Hey, Brian, how you doing?
Hey, you guys rock.
Thanks, man. What's going on, Brian?
What's going on?
Go ahead, bud.
Me and my wife, years ago, we were actually dating at the time, went to a JCPenney because she wanted to get new clothes for this concert we were going to. Well, we look at this lady. She's wearing the same exact outfit my girlfriend wanted to buy.
Yep.
And we get in there, and she's, well, does this make me look sad? And this lady, the other lady that had it, she was about the size of a Volkswagen.
Okay.
So I turned around, and I pointed at that lady, and I said, honey, don't worry, you're not as fat as she is.
Oh,
not as fat as is never going to fly.
Not that fat.
Yeah, I mean.
She was on the rack.
So you died.
Did you point that out, too?
You were like George Clooney in The Perfect Storm.
Right.
Yeah, you were right in the middle of it, and it's not going to let us out.
Mm-hmm.
Not at all. And it's the first and only time she's ever punched me in the face.
There you go. Punched you in the
See?
Face.
Boom.
Yeah. Yep.
You're not that fat, and I think you're on your period.
Yeah.
Oh, and you're just like your mother.
Hang on. There was another going. Oh, yeah.
You're just like your fat mother when she's having her period.
Let me go to Ryan.
Oh, my God.
Hey, Ryan. How you doing?
Hey, guys. What's up?
Not much, buddy. What's your story?
About a couple years ago, I was still in the Navy. I got a call from my buddy telling me to meet him at the local the bar on base, and he sounds like a little, you know, something off.
Yeah.
So I go up there, meet him, and he's like, oh, man, I really screwed up today. Him and his wife were talking about having a baby, and he says, you know, baby, I really want to have a baby with you, but I'm nervous that you're going to be damaged goods afterwards.
Damaged goods?
God, that is terrible.
I looked at him like his wife probably looked at him like, what an idiot.
Yeah,
guys are
Ryan,
so stupid.
Yeah.
Yeah, we are.
Ryan, it's the most amazing to say to a woman, you're supposed to say, yo, you're going to bring in our child and you're going to glow. And I have a feeling your business is going to get all effed up.
Yeah, you're going to blow out your
badge. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's not going to be fun anymore.
I don't want to bang that mess. Oh, sweetie, you know exactly what to say.
Wow, let me go to Scott going on the stupidest things ever said to women. Hey, Scott, how you doing?
Good morning. You guys rock.
Thanks, man. What's happening, buddy?
Not much. A couple years ago, I was dating a woman. She had an apartment with her 21-year-old gay son and his boyfriend. And we were having an argument one night. She was complaining about my cooking and suggested I ask my mother for tips. So yeah. I suggested she ask her son for tips on how to please a man.
Oh my God.
Boom.
Dude, just for audacity, she should have given you points.
That's good.
That's well, it didn't last much longer after that.
I'm guessing so. That's funny,
oh
Scott.
My God.
Thanks.
That's awful.
But you know, he might have had some tips.
Maybe. A
couple of tips.
Let me go to... All right, Tim has one that a woman can say to a man that he says is damaging. Hey, Tim, how you doing?
Good, how are you?
Good, what's happening, buddy?
Okay, one day my wife got in an argument with me, and
She goes, I wanted to ask for your mom on what to do. And basically calling me a mama's boy.
She called you a mama's boy. You know what? I could see that to some level, but I know too many guys who embrace the notion of being a mom. Preston, don't you kind of consider it sort of a badge of honor?
I'm cool with that.
That you're mom's favorite.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's, I don't know if I was my mom's favorite.
Mama's boy.
She died many years ago. I would have to assume she is now because she can't argue that she wasn't.
Oh, stop.
Right.
He's so terrible.
Well, it makes it easier.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's not really considered a bad thing to be a mama's boy.
Kathy, did you see that reality show that was on for a while where it's a bunch of, you know, guys from Brooklyn and stuff were all mama's boys?
Yes.
And they relished the fact that they were mama's boys.
Hang on a second. Let me go to, let's go to Brian. Hey, Brian D., what's happening, man?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good. What's up, buddy?
What was it? Probably like the other week or so, my girlfriend and I are going out to dinner, and she's trying on clothes. She's carrying an extra few pounds, and she's like, what is this? What is this between my shoulder blades? It's like skin or something. And, you know, it folds the skin. I was like, oh, it's all right. She goes, your back boobs.
Your back boobs.
Your back boobs. And she turns around.
Oh, no.
Just glares at me. She's like, get out of my room right now.
Oh. Wow. She was the one, though.
Don't ask.
Asking the question.
But women do that. They will say something. You know, they will
set you up for failure, man.
Do my private parts smell?
They'll say mean things about themselves.
Like cinnamon. Like nutmeg on a winter's morning. You're damn right I do. Like my favorite Christmas ever is what they smell like. Like angel kisses.
Ew.
Now that's the right answer, Steve.
Yeah. You better be a damn tootin' they smell like ice cream.
they're mean about themselves.
It's like a sting operation.
Mm-hmm.
You are being set up.
Yep. And then, like, are you then supposed to lie to them? Like,
yes.
You are supposed
to lie.
Nick is right. They want you to lie to them.
Right.
And they know it's a lie.
But they'll call you out on the lie.
Yeah. Yes. Well, you can, there's no way to retract from. Mm-hmm. In other words, you've said, this is the way I feel. I'm sorry you don't believe your genitals smell like cinnamon on a winter's morning.
You asked, I gave you an answer.
You know, I don't know what you want me to tell you.
No, there's the honest thought in your head, Casey. And then there's this thing that comes out of your mouth, which is a version of that, you know, and you learn how to tailor it, and you lie a little bit, and then you make everything better.
I'm still, though, because it's like the thing we were talking about a couple days ago, Preston, the being set up for the deal with gift giving, you know.
Yeah.
There's no deal.
No, there is no deal.
Yeah, you're being set up.
I was watching This Is 40. I have to finish watching the whole movie. But, it's her 40th birthday, and they go through the whole thing. But you said we weren't going to get each other gifts this year. Well, of course, but you were supposed to get me something.
Exactly.
Come on, man. You're just being set up. Always is. Let me go to Chris. This has some validation to it. Hey, Chris, how you doing?
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Good. What's happening, buddy?
So this hasn't happened to me. It happened to a buddy years ago. That he and his girlfriend were arguing, and she compared him to an ex.
Okay. That I can see.
Okay.
It's awful. Yeah, if women will say that you don't measure up in the way this guy did.
He used to.
Oh, because
are we talking about junk size or just in general?
No. He was just trying to do some, got her a gift, got her flowers, something to ex that for a birch. Well, you know, Bob from a couple of years ago, he got me this and knew that I liked that.
Mm-hmm.
And it just crushed the dude.
Well, you know, my ex's gay son gave really good oral.
Thanks, Chris. By the way, you know what? You just touched on it, Steve. The little genitals. If they are to make that comment, whether it's true or not, that's a deal breaker. That's an ender right
there.
There's
a great sequence in the movie Network. Did you ever see Network?
I didn't, no.
There's a great scene where William Holden, Faye Dunaway's trying to do something to just break up the relationship. She's very young. He's an older TV executive, and she's basically impugns his prowess in the bed, and he starts, like, chuckling to himself and goes, why does a woman think the quickest way to, you know, basically saying that's what you got? But I to maybe someone that it matters a lot more to.
Yeah, that they might have a complex about it already.
Yeah.
And they point it out. That could end it right there.
It could, yeah.
It's not my problem. It's your problem.
Yeah.
Yeah, it feels fine to me.
Yeah. I get mine done.
Sucks to be you, yeah. Right?
I'm done before you even know it's happened.
I guess guys,
I'm already downstairs eating a leg of chicken.
I guess guys aren't quite as sensitive about appearance or weight or whatever. But I mean, you know, if you insult a guy's, you call a guy fat, you know, like somebody will take that personally.
But you know what? We were looking at, my wife and I, we were watching this couple walk by, and I didn't realize it was a couple. The guy's right in front of me. He's walking past, and then I see like a third arm come out around, and it's his very thin, very attractive girlfriend obscured by his hulk. So there's so many times when it defies the laws of natural selection. I don't know if guys are that upset about that, you know? Do you know what I'm saying? I mean,
I'm the heaviest I've ever been, and I hate it. Like,
but you hate it more. If Diane were to bring it up in a fight or an altercation, would that hurt you?
Yeah, it would have to.
Yeah,
I think so.
What if you compared her to an old boyfriend?
I've done that.
You are nothing like Lance.
I just think anytime that you actually, you know, if you're in a fight, when you try and hurt somebody's feelings,
yeah. You go, you're backed into a corner and you go after the one thing that you know will bring them down.
And we don't fight like dirty. That. Like, yeah, right. Yeah. And we never have.
We neither do it.
But if it came to that, I would, you know, take a step back and say, well, why are you doing that? Like,
I tell you that.
We love each other. Why would you try and
say that?
Yeah.
You got to sort of just, you have to pick your battles. You have to hear things that you think are just throwaway things. You have to hear the way she hears them.
Yeah.
And that's something to be learned because that means everything.
Mm-hmm.
You clearly did not mean some of the stuff that she thinks you meant, but you've got to hear it the way. And once you get that down, you can eliminate all that crap.
How it lands on them.
Yep. Right.
How it like that lands
exactly.
On
exactly.
Yeah. That's why I love the fact that my wife has a great sense of humor.
She laughed it off, man.
She laughed it off. And I was just like, why did I just say that? If you're just tuning in, she was returning. My wife is very well endowed, and she had returns to Bras to Lane Bryant. And I said, yeah, I remember being there last time because I was looking at pictures of the fat models.
Who are hot, by the way.
They're
models.
Incredibly hot.
Smoking hot.
Did you see it was it the Chive? Or one of them had the top 20 quote unquote plus size models.
Oh, I tweeted it.
Who look completely
I love it.
Normal,
yeah.
But are gorgeous.
Oh, they even have some chubby, like overweight ones who are smoking hot. I have nothing against that at all. I love me some full bodied ladies.
And yet you don't like pregnant girls.
No.
Mumford and Sons.
We're going to take a break. And we'll be back in just a moment. Stay right where you are.
The Preston and Steve Show podcast.
Wait, turn up the sound.
93.3 WMMR. Now. Everything that rocks.
Please welcome Rome, Eric, and Josh. It is Sublime with Rome.
Yeah.
Eric. Morning, guys.
Billy.
Yeah, how you guys doing?
Wonderful.
Wait, yeah, I have the wrong thing. Let me try that again. Say that again, Rome.
Oh, Shelly.
Yeah.
There we go. Wonderful.
Now I can hear you. Good to see you guys. Welcome back to Philadelphia.
Thank you guys for having us.
Glad to have you here. Do you ever stop touring? Do you ever stop playing? You guys seem to be on the, or at least I read about you all the time.
No, we never stopped.
Yeah. Never. Simple answer, no.
I mean, yeah. Well, I mean, you know, we just have fans, you know, from multiple different places around the world, you know. Yeah. Sublime's music has traveled that far.
Yeah.
That there's always, like, a calling somewhere in the world for us to be. So we just kind of keep it moving. But,
cool.
You know.
Does it wear you down?
A record coming.
Does it wear you down? Do you have to take, I mean, at least just a pause now and then? Or do you just love being on the road?
No, I just love being on the road. I think we all do, man. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, home.
Yeah.
It's either that or what, be at home and just want to be on the road.
You don't want that, yeah.
Yeah. When you guys are playing a show like tonight, an outdoor show, and it's going to be a hot night, is that preferable or does that make it more difficult to play?
No, that sucks. Playing in the heat sucks.
Yeah.
It's got to.
But yeah. I mean, playing in the cold sucks too, so I'd rather play in the heat than the cold though.
Yeah.
So what is it, mostly hot pants and halter tops you guys
do? It's like G-strings and like
pasties.
Yeah. Pasties, yeah. Yeah.
It's going to be good.
I can't wait to see Eric in that get up.
Yeah, yeah.
It's underneath.
How you doing, man?
Yeah, he started drinking the, Victory.
Victory.
Summer.
Yeah,
there you go.
Summer Ale, Philly's finest, right?
Mm-hmm. Wow.
From around here?
Is there any more?
Yeah. There's plenty more, man.
There's a cooler of it, man.
Yeah, you're good to go. How has life been with you guys? Everybody's happy? Everybody's cool? Digging the vibe of the summer?
It's been great. Yeah. We just really kind of started this tour about a week ago or so. So yeah. We're still technically, you know, getting it going, but it's been great this far.
You guys have been playing together for a while, but do you still have to reacclimate into the tour mindset? I mean, I know we hear stories about, you know, almost some bands have to sort of learn the songs again a little bit, you know, before you go out on tour, because you have a lot of songs to play.
Yeah, yeah. It's not so much that we have to, like, learn songs, like, or, you know, practice the ones that we already know because we, you know, play them all the time.
Right.
But it's just more like acclimating into the rhythm of touring again, you know, because you get home for a couple months and, you know, you get locked into the rotation of just being at home, you know, and then all of a sudden it's like, boop, time to go. So you have to readjust.
Do you pick like a perfect set the way you want to do it and then you adjust it as you're out on? I mean, do you guys sit down and go, okay, fourth song's going to be this, fifth song's going to be this, or when you're on the stage, just go as you feel it?
It's a combination of both. Before the tour, we typically tend to like put together something,
yeah.
You know, like, hey, this would be cool, this would be cool. And everybody would be like, yeah, I like this one. And then when we're on stage, then it's just all out the window.
It's
just kind of like,
yeah.
I don't want to play that one. He's like, input this one, you know, so it's, right. You know, basis.
What about the touring band? How do you guys decide on how'd you end up with Pennywise this time around?
Oh, that was our decision.
Yeah.
The last 3 years, we've consistently come out with bands that are like more or less similar to the sound of Sublime, you know, mm-hmm. come out with the Dirty Heads and like 311 and then Modest Yahoo and whatnot. So last year we went kind of like left field and did like Cypress Hill and Sublime,
yeah.
you know, and that was rad. It was a lot of fun. And this year we just kind of wanted to go just right, you know, and go like yeah. punk rock. So we got the Descendants and Pennywise out for, you know, some of these shows. And then Julian Marley, of course, has also accompanied us as well. So it's been awesome, man. I mean, that's like one of the cooler things is, you know, being able to pick which bands.
Sure.
You know, or I mean, Hope, you know, you got to ask them. If they don't like you, then, you know, whatever. But
no, I like it when bands will mix up flavors with the other acts that are on the bill. A bizarre one recently was Kid Rock came through town with Kool and the Gang.
Yeah.
What? I'm like,
yeah.
That's awesome.
I mean, that's kind of like what Kid Rock like used to be, though. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, he was like, that boy from like Detroit, I believe it.
Yeah.
And like, you know, he was a DJ. He was a hip hop dude, like rapping and stuff. So it's pretty cool to see him around.
Did I hear you say you guys are coming out with new music soon?
Yeah, yeah. We're actually in the process of writing the stuff now. I mean, we have like a studio set up in, you know, backstage of every venue.
So does touring serve the purpose of allowing you to perform, but also allowing you to be, because you're focused and you're hanging out together, forcing you to do new music?
It definitely just helps.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, other than that, you know, if we're not backstage writing songs with each other, you know. I mean,
you're getting into trouble.
Yeah, yeah, man. You know, I'll be running around fishing. He'll be running around town doing some crazy shit, you know. I mean, everyone does, like, their own thing. But,
right.
you know, when we have, like, okay, the room's set up, you know, we walk by it and you're like, man, let's go write some stuff. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. I think it's better that way than, like, okay, it's album cycle. Go to the studio, write hits. You
right,
know what
right.
I mean? You know, jam.
Will you throw something in that you're working on stage just to give it the litmus test?
Oh, we always do. I mean, not today because I'm on the radio.
Right,
but,
right.
Like live, I mean, we always just kind of like, you know, freestyle or just mm-hmm. implement like things that we've been working on.
That's cool.
So this keeps it fresh, man, for both us and the audience.
Well, we're going to get a couple songs out of you guys. If you're ready, we're dying to hear some music. So
cool.
Whatever you feel like playing, let's get into it. Sublime with Rome on MMR.
Heaven?
Yeah.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3, 4. Out my window, cool and bright, this so slowly into night. Funny how things look the same now that my friend Evan's changed. Let's go. Evan was a coolie that I used to know. Now he's down with the PLO. Cold kicking it live with the KKK. No GBC, no GFA. Coolie was sporting black denim shoes. Dylan, he was looking for something to use. With a pistol in his pocket and a bottle of booze. Well, it could be me.
be you. It feels like my whole life is rearranged. Evan, you changed. Evan, 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 you. Oh, you changed. Oh, you changed. How you changed. I gave you a hard time and didn't want to say. You got out of jail just the very next day. Oh, it was plain to see. My friend Evan is a Nazi. He was a Nazi, yeah. Hooked on crack just the other day. He's down with the CIA. We got cooler operations in Vietnam, making hits like an assassin. Now it's Saigon. Oh, he went down to protect his country, eat Mexican food and make lots of money. Come back and got and drive a big white car, then take himself a plane down to Nicaragua. Feels like I'm the only one to slowly into night. Funny how things look the same. Now that my friend Eben changed. Let's go.
Is absolutely awesome. It's Sublime with Rome on MMR. I don't know if anything says summer more than, a groove like that.
Fantastic. Thank you guys, man. Appreciate it.
What a groovy, cool flow to your guys' music. What is it about that particular sound that why does that come out of you guys? I mean, are you just laid back by nature
I mean, they're just like, you know, very, very eclectic songs, you know.
Yeah.
And I think, like, you know, using a groove like that with such, like, you know, awesome lyrics and stuff that are so rugged, I mean, it captures a wide audience of, like, you know, kids and then people who just like a good groove, you know?
Yeah, it's an interesting juxtaposition because lyrically it's more impactful and
give you a punk rock song.
Right.
Yeah,
and
totally.
It's sandwiched with this very melodic, as Preston said, very summery feel to it. And it works, you know?
Dude's crazy, man. That's a crazy song.
Yeah. Eric, that bass sounds awesome, by the way. Is that the one you use on stage?
Nope.
Nope.
Radio, I think.
That's a Rich Turner Renaissance.
It's got a very cool sound to it. Why do I sound like I'm in a cave right now?
Because we brought up Eric's mic.
Because it's a reggae dub show. Blah, blah.
That just happened out of nowhere. So you guys, how long is your set usually?
About like an hour and a half, like an hour 40.
Okay. Are you doing the thing where people can tweet in suggestions for set lists and songs?
Yeah. It's the contest that, like, not really a contest, just like a feature that we've kind of implemented this tour because, you know, fans obviously want to hear some of their favorite songs. So, you know, hell, you guys put together a list of some songs and we'll, you know, play the top winners. So.
That's very cool. Wow. Very cool. And I assume you do a lot of dancing and synchronized dancing and stuff on stage.
Yeah, it's great. We just got a new mic package where, you know, you got the Madonna thing.
You got that.
Like, the mic stands in the past.
Perfect,
you know?
Yeah.
It's pretty cool, man.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
A lot of new Corey.
That's awesome. Are you guys personally active on social networking, or do you have people handle that for you, or do you get on and
it's
do
a combination
some stuff?
Of yeah. both. I mean, you know, we obviously try to get in and, like, you know, check as many messages and stuff as possible and answer back fans on, like, the comment pages and stuff. But, you know, when we're, like, you know, in the airplane somewhere, or, like, you know, when we've just been playing like 5 shows straight, and, you know,
you take a break,
gets crazy, man. You don't want to be tweeting, you want to be sleeping.
Yeah. And Rome, how much, I mean, are there still people that, do you still catch flack for being the lead singer of a band who, you know, who was for the most part a replacement lead singer? I mean, I know you're Sublime with Rome, but obviously the band has its roots. Do you still catch flack from people who are, you know,
people won't let it go?
I mean, like, if I go online, I can find anything.
Sure.
Man. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I can find some pretty whack porn, too.
Yeah.
to my face, man, I mean, you know, nobody, thank God, you know, has been mean enough to come to my face. You suck, bro. But
right,
I mean,
right, right.
Dude, let's be realistic here. You can't win everybody over all the time,
No.
So I'm happy at the fact that we at least do have amount of fans that we see every year. And, you know, I've had nothing but, you know, great experiences meeting our fans and, you know, even introducing the band to people who, you know, didn't know that Sublime had continued to play music since Bradley passing away. So to answer your question, I'm sure there's millions of them out there.
Yeah.
But I've never
personally.
They stay
out of your face. Yeah.
They stay out of I'm a big guy, man. You don't really come up and do that kind of stuff. You know what I mean?
No, it's cool.
How did that happen, by the way? How did you guys all end up together?
I met him at a studio. And me and him just started jamming and stuff. And then,
it felt right?
I mean, because he always throws, like, these awesome-ass parties at his house. And then, you know, I would just go to him. And then he's always got, like, you know, instruments and everything set up and jamming. So, because his band plays, his side band. And, you know, you want to come up and play Sublime song? And then we just kind of kept, like, doing it. And then it just made sense.
Because you're talented, you know, on your own, but there are so many talented people out there who just don't meet the right people.
That's all. I mean, man, just staying positive, working hard, and getting lucky.
Cool. All right, well, let's get one more out of you, if you guys don't mind.
Cool.
This is Sublime with Rome on MMR.
Wrong way?
Yeah. He's 12 years old and too much to be a whore. Nobody ever told her it's the wrong way. Don't be afraid by the quickness you'll get laid, or your family get paid, baby, it's the wrong way. Gave her all that I had to give. I'm gonna make it hard to live. Salty tears running down to her chin. Smears up her makeup and never wanted. Cigarette pressed between her, but I'm staring at. If I can, but I am only a man, so I take her to the can. It's the wrong way. The only family that she's ever had is a 7 pony brothers and a drunk ass dad. He needed money, so he put her on the streets. Everything was going fine until the day she met me. Be I sad, wanna shoot your dad. I'll do anything I can. It's the wrong way. We talk all night, try to make. Tight, it was a wrong way. So run away if you wanna stay. Cause I ain't here to make ya. Oh no, it's up to you what you really wanna do. Spend some time in Philadelphia. Oh, don't stop. Ba 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 ba.
day. She did this very day, was a long day. She took a hike, no matter if I like it or not, because she only wants a long day. I gave her all that I had to give, she still wouldn't take it. Oh Lord, her two by nights are leaking like a sieve. Soon to me, number one tip.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Excellent. I don't think I'll ever get tired of that song, man. Excellent. Still got legs.
That was like the first song I ever heard from.
Really?
That was, yeah.
Oh my God, that was the song that put me on.
Wow, there man. We go. Cool.
I mean, playing guitar.
Yeah. Excellent, man. It's going to be excellent.
It's going to be a good day. So, BarmouthRome.com, you can find out the next show you and your friends can road trip to.
And the Twitter account is at Sublime with Rome as
yes,
well.
Sir.
If people want to follow along. Guys, thank you. I know it's tough for bands to get up early and come in here, and we do appreciate you doing that.
Oh, we didn't even sleep. It's no problem.
Hey, have a great show tonight, all right?
Thank
Sublime
you very
with
much,
Rome, everybody.
Yeah.
All right, very we're going to cool. take a break. We'll be back in just a second. You stay right there.
Not only can you hear Preston and Steve, you can see them too. Check out the Weekly Rush on Xfinity On Demand. New episodes, you guessed it, weekly.
Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro, get personalized deals on the products you buy most, and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy, and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors.
Back with more of the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
Now, bizarre. WMMR presents bizarre. Preston and Steve's Bizarre File.
Two men dressed as Batman and Captain America ran into a burning building to save a cat in West Virginia on Saturday.
Yeah!
John Buckland and Troy Markham were dressed in costume, for a children and veterans event. And during the event, some veterans noticed smoke coming from a house. Buckland, a former firefighter, noticed a house was burning by the color of the smoke. He had Markham throw a rock through a window in the house. They both entered and found the passed out cat. Buckland gave the cat...
I have your cat in here. I'm holding it prisoner as part of my new world order.
And Buckland actually gave the cat mouth to mouth, and the cat promptly came around and hissed at him.
Superheroes they are, Preston.
No one was at home at the time of the fire. Medics at the scene had Buckland remove his Batman mask so they could make sure he was okay.
You got to imagine that stuff was incredibly flammable.
But Buckland made all the children who saw promise not to reveal who Batman really is.
Man, that's a good mask.
Yeah, we're looking at a video of him. It's a pretty cool costume. You know what? It's wild. If you were doing an appearance, just dressed up as a superhero,
yeah,
and something happened, wouldn't you?
You bet
be
your
compelled
ass
to jump into action.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely.
Even if you could do it or not,
you better.
You'd have to, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
You would. You better.
I
do
just kind of stood there.
Yeah. Yeah. If Batman comes walking out with a cook cat, sorry.
Yeah. At least
you
tried.
A miserable failure.
Let's see here. A British party bus driver was fined $688 for an extra passenger that wound up to be a blow-up doll. Bash Ali said that he was driving the Mercedes minibus when he was pulled over and cited for having one more passenger than legally allowed.
And it was a blow-up doll?
Yeah. Ali explains that the ninth passenger was actually a blow-up doll. He pleaded guilty because he couldn't afford a lawyer. The prosecutor, Paul Scott, said police were confident the bus was occupied by nine humans when it was pulled over. A feral pig has gone on the rampage at the De Grey River rest area in Western Australia.
Wow.
Stealing 3 6-packs of beer and drinking it all before starting an altercation with a bystanding cow. So the pig gets drunk.
Throws down with a cow.
And throws down with a cow. An onlooker said, in the middle of the night, these people camping opposite us heard a noise, so they got their torch out, flashlight, and shone it on the pig. And there he was, scrunching away at their cans.
Scrunching.
Then he went and raided all the rubbish bags. There were some other people camped right on the river, and they saw him being chased around their vehicle by a cow. The hog was last seen resting under a tree.
Why wouldn't you want to go to Australia?
And then finally, we will end with this one. A man described by police as a self-professed juggalo has been charged with assault following allegations he stabbed the 14-year-old boy. Prosecutors contend James A. Sweet stabbed the boy in the stomach during a birthday party. The boy had lightly taunted Sweet shortly before the stabbing. It's a messed up story. Detectives say the 14-year-old was feeding a campfire at a party when Sweet criticized the boy's fire. The boy told Sweet the fire would be bigger if he tossed him into it. It was a joke.
Yeah.
And that prompted an angry response from Sweet. Having attended the party to impress the parents of a young woman related to the boy, Sweet drank a beer.
Maybe if I stab him. I think I'll get some trim if I stab this kid.
Sweet drank a beer and smoked some marijuana before approaching the teen again. Sweet told the boy that he should not mess with a juggalo. And then, this is a witty remark, the boy said, "You mean those guys that wear makeup?" And that was a bit much for him.
Well, the kid.
He was outraged. Sweet went to his backpack, drew a knife, and stabbed the boy in the side of the chest. He then fled the area. The boy was rushed to a medical center. He remained hospitalized for 4 days. He had a lacerated liver.
Man. Yes.
That can kill you.
Yeah.
He was arrested 4 days after the attack and remains jailed on $250,000 bail.
It's been my experience that even though they look like clowns, they're sad clowns.
And that is what I have in the bizarre file for you. We are going to take a break. We'll be back in just a moment. Stay right there.
Everything that rocks includes cool MMR swag you can wear.
Rock, 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 MMR Rock Shop. Get your MMR gear at the online store. Rock, rock, MMR Rock Shop. Tees and tops and a whole lot more. Rock, rock, MMR Rock Shop. Hoodies and hats for dudes and chicks. Mugs and masks that make great gifts. Rock, 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 MMR Rock Shop.
Get your hands on some awesome merch at MMR's Rock Shop.
Rock, rock, MMR Rock Shop.
Get shopping at WMMR.com now.
Rock, rock, MMR Rock Shop.
All the merch that rocks.
The trash business is a gold mine.
93.3 WMMR with Preston and Steve's Hollywood Trash.
What is going on today, Steve?
Well, Courtney Stodden saying that since her split from actor Doug Hutchinson, she feels like a little girl. Stodden says her therapist was able to explain the sensation by pointing out that she's a little girl. Alanis Morissette's Jagged Little Pill is coming to Broadway as a full-blown musical set to open next year. The theater housing the production will offer both a coat check for the ladies and a scrotum check for the guys.
Hey!
And finally, during a deposition last week, Tom Cruise admitted that keeping daughter Siri out of Scientology was why Katie Holmes divorced him. Cruise was cautioned not to say any more by his lawyer, a Theta 9 plaintiff droid.
Wow.
That's your Hollywood trash.
All right, I read that our next guest, who's in studio, is going to be doing a one-man show in Bluebell, actually at the Montgomery County Playhouse. And I told Casey, I'm like, we got to see if we can get him in here. Because we've had a chance to speak to him on the phone before.
Yeah.
And when he was, I heard
he's
in town.
For Terra Nova.
Yeah, I'm like, we got to have him in if we can do that. And it's cool because it turns out he's a longtime MMR fan.
Yeah.
Which we found out off air. But listen, I want to play a clip real quick just to re-familiarize yourself with him. You've seen him in movies like Tombstone and Manhunter and Gettysburg and Avatar, which I'll play this clip for you just to bring it back up to speed.
You are not in Kansas anymore. You are on Pandora. Out there beyond that fence, every living thing that crawls, flies, or squats in the mud wants to kill you and eat your eyes for jujubes.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's Mr. Stephen Lang.
Yeah. Do you like doing little independent films like that, Stephen? The Avatar? Yeah, whatever happened to that movie?
I don't know. Yeah. Just gearing up for the next 17, I think.
Hey, well, let's talk about your history in Philadelphia, mm-hmm. because you had mentioned you used to listen to MMR back in the day.
Back in the 70s, I was a student at Swarthmore College.
No kidding.
And I listened to MMR every day. That's where I got my Grateful Dead dose.
Very good.
We probably listen to Frank Zappa.
Oh, yeah. And you rightly pegged it as we were talking. It was sort of an underground. It was the station that your parents probably didn't want you listening to. But
it was
yeah.
one of the great benefits of living in around Philly at the time.
Very
for sure.
Cool.
Yeah. Frank Rizzo didn't approve.
I grew up around the corner from Swarthmore College. I spent a lot of my adolescence and teenage years hanging around on that campus because they have beautiful woods back there and a really nice amphitheater. I don't know if you have ever done any shows out there.
Sure, sure. I spent a lot of time in the amphitheater doing shows, making out.
Yeah.
And same thing.
We would, you know, after I was in college, we would go there to break the law, so to speak, back in the woods. But I was going to ask you, I had a teacher at my school. He told me he went to a party at Swarthmore College one time, and there was a secret wall. I don't know if you remember this, or but there was a secret wall that would move, and there was
You, so are you familiar with this?
Yeah, I can't tell you about it. It's just a secret wall, man. Yeah. I remember it well.
What does this secret wall conceal, or can you suggest it without us getting
a
killed?
A whole other party room of some sort, yeah.
It's where you go to break the law. Swarthmore, law don't go around here.
Yes! Mike Clanton! Awesome line, man.
You are so friggin' good. We're gonna geek out on you. Prepare for this, because I told you right off the bat. I've been a huge fan of yours for years. I mean, Crime Story got it rolling for me with Dennis Farina. We had Billy Campbell in a little while ago. You guys both seem to be drawn, by the way. He seems to be a big history fan, as do you.
Billy?
Yeah.
Billy's one of my best friends in the world, has been for 30 years, and he knows his history. We've done a lot of work together.
You're drawn to the Civil War period, it appears? Well, or is that just by luck of the draw, the roles you get?
It's a bit of luck of the draw, but you know, as you get into it, one thing leads to another, so I always go back to Gettysburg. You know, this is the 150th sesquicentennial year of the Civil War, and 150 years ago, Gettysburg was, I don't know, how do you put it, the place to be.
Yeah, and, or not to be, depending on where you were. Yeah,
we were down there this summer to mark the occasion. It was extraordinary.
It's amazing. And the thing is, you hope when you live in this area that the that it doesn't get lost on you where we are, you know, geographically to this stuff. You know, there are people who go and do the recreation stuff. Like you've done it with major films.
Sure.
Is there when you get into the garb, is there something transformative that takes place?
Well, I think so. Yeah. I mean, it's a, you know, it's an exercise in imagination, and these guys love to do it. The reenactors, they kind of combine a love of history with a love of camping and pretend and weaponry and whatever. They're very, very good folks, you know. It's
you have a rich history. You got started, I think, the way actors, at least the way I've always, you know, romanticized an actor should go about it, doing the stage stuff. You were more a stage actor. And you tooled around and did all the, you know, you wanted to do the classics. You wanted to be a classic actor, correct?
Yeah, I started out really very close to here. My first semi-professional show was at Hedgerow Theater, which is in Rose Valley.
Yeah.
That's where I really started out. And from there, I just, you know, kept working, putting one foot in front of the other. I spent a lot of years on stage. And then in the early 80s, managed to start moving into the movies and into television. And so now I kind of just bounce back and forth. But I haven't been on stage now in 6 years.
I remember.
So it's really kind of a trip to go back.
You know, you were part of one of the great moments of television. You were in Death of a Salesman with Dustin Hoffman playing Willie Loman. And they televised that.
Yeah.
And I remember it was a huge moment in television, and the performance was amazing. You were in it, John Malkovich. And it was, I think that one thing did more to make more people aware of how powerful theater can be because of the way it was captured. Is that one of the high points of your career? It has to be.
Well, it was a great point, being cast in the Broadway. Death of a Salesman with Dustin was, for a young actor at the time, it was a life-changing experience, rivaled only by Jim Cameron then asking me to do Avatar.
Right.
But I do remember about, of course, we'd done it on Broadway 290 times or something, and then we did the movie of it, which was wonderful.
Was that to commemorate the ending of the run?
It was just part of the deal.
Yeah.
We did the movie, and of course we lost the evening. You know, we got beat by something called Blue Thunder.
Roy Scheider.
We got our asses kicked or something by something else. But it was a terrific, beautiful, beautiful film. Working with Dustin for that long was kind of like getting a master's tutorial. Yeah.
We hear two things. He's eccentric and that he's you think he's this intense method actor, but there's that, but he's also just like a fun guy.
A lot of fun. He's both of those things are true. But he certainly is a master actor, so I learned a lot from him.
When you're doing Death of a Salesman and everyone just sort of knows how it ends, you ever tempted one night to give it a happy ending?
I tried to. Every night I played happy, man. Every night was a happy ending. Hey, I'm still alive. I'm here. I'm going.
Willie comes out of the basement. I didn't do it.
So long, Pop. We're selling the house, Ma.
Just put another spin on it. Who could complain? You were also the first. Did you play first person to play Colonel Jessup in A Few Good Men?
That was my role. Yeah. Yep. I was Colonel Jessup for over a year on Broadway, and then they give it to some no name actor to do the movie, and I was very annoyed about that. But I thought he did a real good job.
He did.
Listen,
yeah.
When you lose a role to Jack Nicholson, I think you can only kind of bow your head and step back.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. How much of Jessup ended up in your portrayal in Avatar?
Well, that's an interesting question. None. I mean, I hope none. But
yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
They're both colonels. I've been asked who would win in a kick-ass between Jessup and Quaritch, and I've always said, "Oh, I think Quaritch."
Oh yeah, Quaritch
is hard to beat.
Was the speech the long speech that he gives? Was it the same on stage as it is on screen? The son, we live in a world with walls, and those walls.
Those walls have
to be guarded by men with guns. Men.
Who's going
to
do it? You.
You, Lieutenant Weinberg?
You, Lieutenant Weinberg?
Yeah, he remembered it all.
I memorized it.
It was the same.
Awesome moments in
it was
cinema.
A lot of fun to rehearse, yeah. I'll tell you.
I'm sure,
that.
Absolutely.
It was like sitting down, getting like a big personal pan pizza every day, you know? you just tear through that
Your
son
moment.
Of a gun, you know? And you'd and playing it every night on stage was also... That was another high point.
Gotta be, yeah.
In a career, to be on a Broadway show that was so it was so rousing. The only thing that ever bugged me, I remember about it, at the end, they'd always play Anchors Away, and I said, how come you don't play the Marine hymn at the curtain call?
Yeah, right? Yeah.
I have to ask you something about your personal life, and you never know if these things are true or not, but it stood out to me when I read
I brush my teeth before I kiss. Yes.
He brushes his teeth before he kisses. Nice.
Right. And I would not kiss a girl just eating a cockroach.
Okay. All right. Good. That was it. No, I read that that your father told you growing up that you would not receive an inheritance, that you had to live your own life and make your own way.
And my day was going so well.
Your father was quite a philanthropist.
My father still is. My dad still. I saw him the other day. He's 95. And he's a great guy. He's a great pal and inspiration. He's taken care of a lot of people over the years. He's a good example. And anything I've ever needed, if I've ever been short, you know, if I said, Dad, I got to get home, I don't have car fare home, he'd give me a subway token. But he's always taking care of me and my family. He does not believe in inherited wealth. Unless he changes his mind in the next year. So, you know, I'm up for anything. You know,
you can always hope for dementia.
If you're just tuning in, it's actor Stephen Lang who's here. And Steve had mentioned while we were off air, Stephen, about Crime Story. Hmm. And we lost Dennis Farina this year.
Oh, yeah.
And you and he were really good friends.
Stymie was a great pal of mine. He was a wonderful, he was a terrific actor, smart, tough guy. Real Chicago, total Chicago.
He's a real cop.
He'd been for 18 years. Yeah. He'd been busting heads at the 68 political convention.
Really? So, the Democratic convention?
Absolutely,
wow.
Absolutely. And actually, you mentioned Billy Campbell. The role that Billy played, Joey and Deli in Crime Story, was actually based on Dennis.
Really?
Yeah. But Dennis, he was a natural and he was one of a kind. He turned me on. He showed me Chicago because I was a New York guy. I didn't know Chicago when I got there. And Dennis, every door was kind of open to him because he had a badge.
Right.
I remember being so impressed. He could park anywhere.
Yeah.
And to me, you know, that's everything. Well, you can park, man.
You know, Billy Campbell was telling us that you guys, and I wondered because the show takes a transition and he head out to Vegas and the show, and he says, that's basically because you guys got kicked out of Chicago.
Well, we blew up part of Chicago. It was a problem. They set off an explosion in an elevator, and you know when you light a match in an enclosed like a silo or an elevator, it can have bad repercussions. And there was it blew up the elevator, and it blew out part of a wall.
Ooh.
And people were there was a restaurant on the other side, so diners got blown up, and so that didn't go over well.
They didn't
in
like
Chicago,
that. Yeah.
Which, I mean, they'll put up with a lot in Chicago.
But
finally, we did have to leave. We went to Vegas, where basically, you know,
anything happens,
goes.
They're fine.
Back in those days.
You were working with Michael Mann, who directed you in Manhunter.
And in Public Enemies
Public Enemies. We're really good. Yeah. Another really good film. Well, yeah. We hear he's very attention detail-oriented, can be very tough. Is that what he is?
My policy with Michael is basically yes, sir, no, sir, how high, sir?
Yeah.
But I've known Michael now for many, many years, and I just think the world of him. He's a true artist. He can be a sweetheart. He can be as tough and mean as they come, but
right.
None of it fazes me. Crime Story, you know, working hour drama series is about as it's as close as you come to actual work.
Yeah,
in the acting business, and
because you're doing a movie,
you never, it never stops.
Yeah, it never stops.
Yeah. Well, actually, it did stop.
It did. Stop.
They, they canceled us.
Speaking of stopping, it pissed me when they canceled Terra Nova.
I'm still not over it, man.
Yeah,
we have a ton of texts that are coming in. Obviously, huge fans that want to know about Terra Nova and why that went down the tubes.
I was surprised.
Yeah.
But it's become old news to me because don't want it to sound like it's sour grapes.
Yeah.
But I did feel just the statement on it is that the show had found itself at the end of the season. You know, it took them a while to decide who they were writing for. They were trying to, the idea was to do a family show.
Right.
And I think they were thinking in terms of Bonanza or Lost in Space or something. And, you know, the family has changed.
Yes.
A lot.
And it changed. The tone changed in the right direction. Got darker with these malevolent influences involved.
Yeah.
A lot more contention. And it was just hitting its stride. My wife and I were furious.
If they'd given it, I felt if they'd given it another year, it would have become a franchise show. It would have taken, you know, really felt that way. And even as we were still, if you counted in all the people who TiVo it, whatever, you know, we were getting over 10 million viewers a week. But I guess it wasn't enough. I was sorry because I loved playing the part. And the sad thing to me is, I felt we had so much more story to tell.
Yeah.
And when you cancel a show, it's like you're putting a padlock on the door of that world and throwing away the key. And that was
unfortunate. That's the bitch of it. I've read some interviews with you, and you know, and you have Spielberg behind this show, and it's still not enough sometimes, you know? So when you enter into Avatar with James Cameron, and you're basically on a set with a lot of green screens, even with James Cameron's track record, you're going, what's going on here? Because everything is green screened. It's all in the computer.
What you got to remember about Avatar is that when we were making it, nobody had any idea that it was going to become the phenomenon that it did.
Right.
As a matter of fact, I would wager that if somebody had said to the guys at Fox, listen, we'll guarantee that you're going to make 3/4 as much as Titanic made. Will you take it? And they'd say, absolutely. In fact, it doubled, more than doubled Titanic. And so who knew? You know, but now the expectations, of course, are very, very, very high
for the sequels.
I was blown away before the picture even got to Pandora. You know, just sitting, on the spaceship. I don't recall ever having a movie experience like that with the 3D, and you know, because I said the first time I saw it was 3D IMAX. I was just blown away, and then they land on Pandora, and it was a beautiful film.
Working with Jim Cameron to me. Is I always liken it to working in Leonardo's workshop. You're working with a master. He's not only a visionary artist, but he is an engineer. You know, he builds things.
Isn't he the guy holding the camera a lot of the time?
Jim would be as close as I am to this mic with a camera in my face half the time. He likes to operate. Doesn't always operate, but he operates a lot. He thinks through the lens.
From your theater world, did that actually speak to you? Because you're basically on set. You're having to create stuff in your mind. You're not, a lot of times if you're an actor, you're on a set that's set to sort of, okay, this is what the set looks like, I can work off this. Yeah, nothing to work off of.
Yeah, you create it in your mind, you discuss it, but then the tough stuff is deciding where that damn creature is.
Right.
And you got a guy who's putting an X on the thing, and Cameron's going, it's not over there, it's over there. And I'm going, actually, I think it's over there. You know? And the whole thing gets kind of stupid after
a while. It's kind of so confusing, though. Just, you know what I mean? I mean, for him to say, no, it's, you know, a little to the left or a little to the right, like, that's... That's pretty difficult.
Well, it's particularly confusing for me with my limited. You know.
He's Da Vinci. Yeah.
I see there were certain He's people who took to it like that.
Yeah.
What about the apparatus that you were in? What that was
the amp suit.
Yeah. Were you in something, right?
Yes, we have an amp suit. We had it in several different incarnations. And so when you see close-ups of me, I'm in the amp suit, which is on a big gyro. So it's a bit like a mechanical bull.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And when you get more nicks and bruises than that thing. The problem with the amp suit is there's only one way in. You got to drop in. And what they did was they put a bicycle seat in.
Oh,
there.
Man.
So I don't know if you remember, there's one section in the film where I'm on fire, my shoulder's on fire, and I jump in, and people have always said, that's cool, man, your shoulder was on fire. Did that hurt? And I said, I wasn't thinking about the fact that I was on fire, because when you drop into that bicycle seat, there's no way you don't hurt yourself.
You're thinking about your balls.
No, I was thinking about my ball. Yeah. And I was retracting them is what I was doing.
Yeah.
I was sucking them in, man. And I told the designers, I said, listen, if you ever do this again, put in a tractor seat, will you? Flat.
Yeah. Right, yeah. For Avatar 2, obviously.
On the opposite end of the spectrum as far as filming conditions go, Gettysburg, Tombstone, movies with horses and stuff like that, westerns and Civil War, that's got to be a fun experience, getting to play with guns and ride around. I would imagine you're pretty good on a horse from an experience like this, right?
I did a lot of horse work over the years. I haven't been on one. Well, no, I was on this summer in Gettysburg. But, I think that if I had to pick one genre,
western,
it would be odors. Yeah, I love westerns.
Are you most recognized for Ike Clanton?
No, I'm hardly recognized.
I was going to say
for him because
the beard. That's right. Yeah,
he was a tobacco stained, dirty old cur. Right. But I
guess Avatar's cleared the. At least Avatar's got to be.
And he did not brush his teeth. Before. He never brushed.
Did you not brush your teeth? When you were...
No. And I didn't have a drink of water in 4 months either.
You can almost smell you on through the screen.
Thank you, sir.
Dirty, and I think we had you on the phone when we were called in to talk about Terra Nova. It didn't even look like you because he looked like kind of a scrawny guy. You had to have been hunched over when you were playing him because you're a built guy. But I mean, it was just it was just a reprehensible character.
That was a great fun shoot, but it almost killed all of us.
Yeah. Really,
it was good when it ended. Finally,
really, just done with it.
Well, everybody got deep into it. You know.
Hey, when you were up for that role, not just that role, but any role, because I've heard people say they had to lie about horse riding. Like, uh-huh. Do you ride horses?
Right.
Yes, I do. You know, even if you've never been on a horse before.
Yeah. I don't think I lied about that one. But I would lie.
Yeah, of course.
Absolutely. I'll tell you, I can do anything. You know, I can drive it. You know, I can operate, heavy machines.
Sure. I'm a pilot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
I'll do it.
Sure. Yeah.
Yes, I've jumped before. Yes, yes.
Well, we're excited you had a chance to come by and say hello. When I read that you were going to be doing this, I said, "Well, let's get him in here because you're one of our favorites." Was not aware of your Philadelphia history. Which
there you
is
go,
very cool.
Baby.
Swarthmore College.
I used to play the Zeller back at the Annenberg Center. Also,
know,
yeah, we always had a saying: "We play Philly; it's chilly in Philly."
Yeah. Thanks so much for your time. We appreciate it,
Bellas. Thanks so much for having me on. It's great to be back, and good luck, MMR.
Our pleasure. Right, thanks so much.
Stephen Lang, everybody. On the Preston and Steve Show. We're going to take a break. We'll come back in a moment. We'll be right back.
Preston and Steve on 93.3 WMMR.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.